జయం శుపాద పరమహంస పరివ్రాజకాచార్య అష్టోత్తరశత శ్రీ శ్రీమాన్ అభయచరణారవింద భక్తివేదాంత గోస్వామి మహర్షి శ్రీల ప్రభుపాదికి జయం. తిరిలా ప్రవిష్ట విశుపాద పరమహంస పరివ్రాజకాచార్య అష్టోత్తరశత శ్రీ శ్రీమాన్ భక్తి సిద్ధాంత సరస్వతి మహర్షి శ్రీల ప్రభుపాదికి ఆనందగుడి వైష్ణవ బృందకి నామాచార్య శిలహరిదాస్ ఠాకూర్కి ప్రేమ సహో శ్రీకృష్ణ చైతన్య ప్రభు నిత్యానంద శ్రీ అద్వైత గదాధార శ్రీవాసాది గౌర భక్త బృందకి శ్రీ శ్రీ రాధాకృష్ణ గోప గోవినాథ శ్యామగుండ రాధాగుండగిరి గోవర్ధానికి వృందావన ధామ్కి మాయపూర్ ధామ్కి మధురపురి ధామ్కి జగన్నాథపురి ధామ్కి ద్వారకాపురి ధామ్కి గంగమాయికి యమునమాయికి తులసిదేవికి భక్తిదేవికి సామవేద భక్త బృందకి గో ప్రేమ. All glories to assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to Shri Guru and Gauranga, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Namo Shubhadaya Krishna Prasaya Bhudale Shivali Bhaktivedanta Swamini Dinamini. Namaste Saraswadevi Gauravani Prajarini Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pashatya Deshadharini. ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ, ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ, ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ. సంసార సాగరే మగ్నం దీనం మాం కరుణానిధే కర్మగ్రాహకహీదాంగం మాముద్ధరవవార్ణవాన్. శ్రీమద్భాగవదాఖ్యోయం ప్రత్యక్ష కృష్ణమేవ హి శ్రీకృతోసి మయా నాథ ముక్త్యర్థం భవ సాగరే మనోరథే మదీయోయం సఫలా సర్వదా త్వయా నిర్విఘ్నేనైవ కర్తవ్యం దాసోహం తవ కేశవ. భవే భవే యథా భక్తి పాదయోస్తవ జాయతే తదా కురుష్వ దేవేశ నాథస్త్వం నో యద ప్రభో. నసంకీర్తనం యస్య సర్వపాప ప్రణాశనం ప్రణామో దుఃఖశమనం తం నమామి హరిం పరం. జన్మాద్యశ్రయదోన్వయాదిదరద చాపేష్వభిన్యస్వరాన్ తేనే బ్రహ్మ హృదాయ ఆదిగవయే ముహ్యందియల్ సూరయ. తేజో వారిమృదం హావినిమయో యత్ర త్రిసర్గో మృషా నామ్నా స్వేన సదా నిరస్తకుహకం సత్యం పరం ధీమహి. ధర్మ ప్రోజ్జిత కైదవోత్ర పరమో నిర్మత్సరాణం సదా వేద్యం వాస్తవమత్ర వస్తు శివదం తాపత్రయోన్మూలనం. శ్రీమద్భాగవతే మహాముని కృతే కింబాపరైరీశ్వర సద్యో హృద్యవరుద్యేత్రకృతి శుశ్రూషుభీతక్షణాల్ నిగమకల్పదరోర్గలిదం ఫలం శుకముఖాదమృతద్రవ సంయుతం పిబత భాగవతం రసమాలయం ముహురహోరసియా భువి భావుకాః. సచ్చిదానందరూపాయ విశ్వోత్పత్త్యాదిహేతవే తాపత్రయ వినాశాయ శ్రీకృష్ణాయ వయం నమః. యం ప్రవ్రజంతం అనువేదమవేదకృత్యం ద్వైపాయనో విరహకాతరమాజుహావ పుత్రేతి తన్మయదయత్తరవోభినేదు తం సర్వభూతహృదయం మునిమానతోస్మి. యస్వానుభావమఖిల శ్రుతిసారమేకం అధ్యాత్మదీపమతిదీర్షదాం తమోంధం సంసారిణాం కరుణయాః పురాణగుహ్యం తం వ్యాససూనుముపయామి గురుం మునీనాం. నారాయణం నమస్కృత్య నరం చైవ నరోత్తమం దేవీం సరస్వతీం వ్యాసం తతో జయముదీరయే. కమనీయ కిశోరముగ్ధమూర్తే కళవేణుకొణిదాదృదాననేందోః మమ వాచి విజృంభతాం మురారే మధురీం న కణికాపి కాపికాపి. ఓం విష్ణుపదాయ కృష్ణప్రస్థాయ భూతలే శ్రీమదే భక్తివేదాంత స్వామినిది నామిని. నమస్తే సరస్వతి దేవిం గౌరవాణి ప్రచారిణి నిర్విశేష శూన్యవాది పాశ్చాత్యాదేశధారిణి శ్రీమద్ గురుచరణారవిందాభ్యాం నమః. వందే నంద వ్రజ స్త్రీణాం పాదరేణుమభీష్ణశ
യാസം ഹരിഗതോദ്ഗീതം പുനാദിഭുവനത്രയം ഗോപീചരണാരവിന്ദ പരമാണവേ നമ പീതാംബരം കരവിരാജിത ചക്രശംഖം കൗമോദകീ സരസിജം കരുണാസമുദ്രം രാധാസഹായമതിസുന്ദര മന്ദഹാസം വാതാലയേശ മനിഷം ഹൃദി ഭാവയാമി കോമളം പൂജയൻ വേണം ശമളോയം കുമാരക വേദവേദ്യ പരം ബ്രഹ്മ വാസദാം പുരതോ മമ ഹൂനം കരോതി വാചാലം പങ്കം ലംഘയതേ ഗിരിം യൽകൃപാതമഹം വന്ദേ പരമാനന്ദമാധവം ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണായ നമ ശ്രീമതി രാധികായേ നമ സർവത്ര ഗോവിന്ദനാമ സങ്കീർത്തനം ഗോവിന്ദ ഗോവിന്ദ
So, with this chapter 27, Kriya Yogam, Krishna is saying that more or less the instructions are coming to an end. What Krishna has spoken to Uddhava. Afterwards, there is two more chapters, 28 and 29. And basically, Krishna is summarizing the instructions he has given to Uddhava before in those two chapters. 28 is basically a summary of the knowledge what Krishna has given to Uddhava before, and 29 is the a summary of the devotion, bhakti. Jnanam is summarized in 28 and bhakti is summarized in the 29th. So that is how those two chapters remaining there. And this Kriya Yogam is practically the last chapter Krishna has given us the direct instructions to Uddhava, which is normally we call it as the deity worship process. So if you look into the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the 9th canto, 14th chapter, the very last two verses, if you read, you will see there that in the Satyayugam there was no deity worship. Satyayugam, there was no deity worship. Satyayugam pranavam, om, was the main process of worship, Brahma, and people absorbed in meditation. Meditation was the process. Last two verses, you will see this in the 14th chapter, last two verses. So, you can understand then. That whole chapter is about the personality we discussed yesterday, Pururavas. Pururavas' life and Pururavas' relationship with Urvashi, how Pururavas spent his lifetime in this world with Urvashi, all that is spoken in that chapter. The whole chapter is about Pururavas and Urvashi in the 9th canto. But the end of that chapter, in the last two verses, it says that that when Pururavas started the administration of the planet, by then Tredayugam has started. And with the advent of Tredayugam, also the process of worship has changed. People could not do that form of worship, what they did in the Satyayugam.
they started the process known as sacrifices. Yajnam started. So Trayayugam began with Yajnam or sacrifices. And this continued, and it is in the Dwapara Yugam that deity worship has started. Deity worship didn't exist in the original Vedic times. It didn't exist. It came about much later. In the Dwapara Yugam, the deity worship has begun. So, Krishna is talking about here various methods by which one can bring the mind under control, like Bhikshu Gita, where he spoke that inquiring about the self, and it is possible to control the mind through what is the process, what the Bhikshu has gone through, Bhikshu Gita. It is possible. And on the other hand, whenever we see something, any sense object here, to bring the understanding that is Krishna who is present there, and in that way it is possible to break up that connection with the sense object. And in that way attention can be turned towards Krishna. Whatever we see in the creation, seeing that as a manifestation of Krishna, any object here in this world, in that way, that means both the process of creation and destruction, what we discussed, and realizing that there is nothing here except Krishna. If we come to that understanding, our mentality of enjoying the senses will go away, because everything what you see is Krishna. And then there is no more a sense object existing there, and therefore we will get released from the problem of sense gratification. In that way it is possible to control the mind, and Krishna has spoken that through the Sankhya Yoga process. Then Krishna said that the three modes of material nature which is present everywhere, and understanding that modes of nature properly analyzing them, and seeing the difference between the three modes, Sattugunam, Rajogunam and Tamogunam, one can develop Sattugunam, and through Sattugunam to develop further into Bhakti, and finally in that way get released from the difficulty of the controlling the mind. Also will come to under his control. Now, in addition to that, those who have got very strong attachment to senses, sense of gratification, and whenever they see a name or a form, namarupam, or sense objects, they can only see them as an object of sense enjoyment. Anything when they look outside, they can only see that as an object of enjoyment. So such people, those who are looking for gratification or sense enjoyment all the time, and people like us who are ordinary people who see everything whenever they say same thing, and to look at them and to say that it is all Krishna who is present there, and that's very difficult. Those of us who are like us, and those who have that attachment to sense enjoyment strongly, to see things in this creation and to recognize Krishna's presence in that is also difficult. So such people who are very attached to sense enjoyment, and they have to first come out of that, to get their sense enjoying nature must go away. At least it should get diminished. And to that they require some discrimination. And only when the attachment, sense enjoyment comes down, only then they will have that capacity, discrimination power, to understand that Krishna is present in everything. So for that purpose, Krishna mentions there, Salsangam is the best process. And that is what Krishna has shown through the story of Pururava story. For example, through constantly thinking about Urvashi, in that illusion, from that illusion, Pururavas got released through Salsangam. That is what helped him to come out of that attachment, then so through satsangam he came out of that relationship with Urvashi, and then he got back to his normal state. Normal state means he came back to spiritual life again. He has fallen down because of attachment to Urvashi, and it took a long time for him to realize it and to get himself freed from that attachment to Urvashi. And when he got free himself, then he could see that he was under the influence of this strong attachment to Urvashi. And when he got that sense back, and he got freed himself from, we reflected on that very, very strongly, and he managed to get released from the Brahmam or the illusion what he was living in relationship with Urvashi. So from Pururava's story, we can understand that only through the developing that power, capacity to discriminate things, which one has to acquire from satsangam, and that is the only way that ordinary people can come out of their attachment to senses and sense enjoyment and get the mind released from their situation. So in that way they can turn their attention towards Krishna or towards the self. So this is what Pururava's story has shown to us. Bhikshugita, Sankhyam, then three modes of material nature, and finally satsangam. Four different ways of controlling the mind Krishna has spoken. So all these different processes Krishna has spoken, and unfortunately all of them have its own difficulties also. To get satsangam all the time is difficult. That's also not possible. Only one who are very, very fortunate, they will have that satsangam as well. So for everybody, for controlling the mind, Krishna has spoken another process, which is now addressed as Kriya Yoga. Kriya Yoga is another process Krishna has suggested. So from ordinary people to all others, everybody else in this world, all of them can take up to this process, and it can help for controlling the mind. So that Kriya Yogam, Krishna is talking about that, because Uddhava has asked that question. Uddhava asked the question to Krishna. So, and there Krishna is addressing Uddhava, Puja Vidhi. Puja Vidhi means the rules of deity worship, or Kriya Yogam Krishna is instructing here in this chapter. This requires a specialist knowledge, this to talk about this deity worship. Only one who knows deity worship, he can talk about this. He can talk about this. Like me, it's not possible to explain Puja Vidhi or this Kriya Yogam properly, because you require that tradition in you to explain this properly to others. That means that parampara, paramaryam in the Tandriya Vidhi. Tandriya Vidhi. So anybody can read this chapter and understand the meaning of the verse. That's not difficult. Anybody can read that translation and the purport. But you will not be able to do the deity worship by reading this chapter. You cannot do it. That is the problem. Because deity worship is not something what can be spoken for an hour or two or 4 or 5 hours and the other person will understand that. That is not how deity worship works. There's a lot of limitations on this chapter. So, and therefore, what will I say now about this deity worship? A background of that, where it's coming from, And what is the underlying principle in this deity worship, which will not be against what Krishna has spoken, which will be completely in agreement with that. But at the same time, you have to remember the limitations also. That by, I will read through the verses and talk about the what each verse is saying, but you will not be able to do the deity worship based on that. Deity worship is not a topic for a lecture or a class. It is a topic for practically you have to work, you have to do the deity worship with somebody who knows how to do the deity worship. Only then you can understand that. Now you have to go back to the history when the deity worship has begun in this world. So, Krishna talks about three kinds of deity worship here in this chapter. Kriya Yogam, Vaidhyam, Tandriyam, Mishram. Three types. Three types of deity worship Krishna has spoken. Vaidhyam means what is based on the Vedam, Mantram. Tandriyam means what is based on the Tantram. And Mishram means mixed up, both. Vaidhyam and Tandriyam mixed. So, initially, Tandriyam and the Mishram didn't exist. The Kriya Yogam or deity worship started with Vaidhyam. Vaidhyam is the first process based on the Vedam. And Vaidhyam worship is Homam. Homam means that keeping the fire as the witness of everything and offering to the fire as a representative of the truth. Fire is representing the truth and offering everything to the fire, which is called Homam, is the first way of Vaidhya system of worship. Vaidhya system of worship. So, fire is taken as a representative of Krishna. Representative of Krishna. And this upasana, upasana means this worship form, which is based on the external object. Worship on the, unlike Antaryami upasana. Antaryami upasana is internal, isn't it? Antaryami is present inside. But here, only as an external side, worship began with this Ishara Upasana or external Upasana, depending on a source outside. That began like this in two ways. One is called Pratika Upasana and the other one is called Pratima Upasana. Pratika Upasana means, the difference is, Pratika means as a representative of the Absolute Truth, who is present there in the form of fire, in the form of fire. And secondly, Pratima Upasana is worshipping the form in the deity way, in the deity form, worshipping a particular form in the deity. So these two things existed in the beginning, Pratika Upasana and Pratima Upasana. If you go back into the history, you will see these things, because deity worship is practically in relationship with the time from the Vedam, Vedic times. When you look at it, it is relatively new. It's not that old. It was introduced at a much later date in Dwapara Yugam. And later on in Kali Yugam, it's still continuing. But origin, before that, if you look into Satyayugam and even Treta Yugam, you could see that deity worship was not a followed practice. So, Pratikam and Pratima, two different ways. Pratikam means, Pratikam and Pratimam, there is a difference there. That Pratima means, there is a form, and in a particular form it is carved, the deity, and worshipped there. For example, Vishnu. Vishnu is given a form there, is it not? Vishnu is given a form there, a particular form. Bluish color. The color of the clouds and dark complexion, mixture of dark and blue color, and four-handed form, and four conch shell, disc, lotus flower, and club, four weapons in the hand, and then angam and upangam, the difference other like kaustubham, srivalsam, so many different decorations on him. Then Krishna has a sorry, Vishnu has a vehicle as Garuda. Garuda has a vehicle. So, in this way, Vishnu's form was created. Created means that it was taken as form of worship. And to that, all these things were added on to it, to the form. Conch shell disc, lotus flower, and club, and then Srivalsam, Kaustubham, Vanamala, and so many other things were to a worshipable form of Vishnu was introduced. So Vishnu has a particular form. Then Srivalsam, Kaustubham, and Srivalsam is that what you know when Bhrigu Maharshi kicked on Vishnu's chest, the mark there, that is Srivalsam. Then Kaustubham is that special jewel which Vishnu wears, which was come out of while chaining the milk ocean, which was given to Vishnu. Vishnu started wearing that. So they are called the jewelry, what Krishna Vishnu wears. Then his vehicle is Garuda. Garuda is his vehicle. So what you have to remember is that any deity form, we are giving a form to that personality, a form to that personality by using Maya Tattvam. Maya's Tattvams you are using to give the personality a form. Personality a form. So here what you have to remember is Brahman has a Sagunam and Nirgunam. Nirgunam is the untouched by the modes of nature, free from the three modes of material nature. That is Nirgunam. Saguna means that is this form worship. And that is our topic now in this chapter. Saguna Brahmam, how do we worship? Remember, in the 87th chapter of the 10th canto, Parikshit Maharaj asked a question to Shukla Brahmarshi that how do we relate with the Nirguna Brahmam, impersonal Brahmam? How do we relate with that? If you want to look at that, you will see that the first question itself in the 10th canto, 87th chapter. The first question itself is that how our mind will have a relationship with the Nirguna Brahmam. Nirguna Brahmam, he says there. So from there, that Brahman, Brahmanya Nirdeshe, Nirgune Gunavurtaya, first verse in the 87th chapter. Parikshit Uvacha, Brahman, Brahmanya Nirdeshe, Nirgune Gunavurtaya, Katham Charandi Shraya, Sakshal Sadasada Pare. Parikshit is saying to Shukla Brahmarshi that Brahman, Brahmanya Nirdeshe, Shruti is capable of explaining Brahman, but Brahman is Nirgunam. Nirguna means no modes of nature present there, free from the three modes of material nature. And how can the mind can discuss or absorb in the Brahman, which is outside the three modes of material nature? And how can the words describe the absolute truth, Brahman? How can the words describe the absolute truth? So sound cannot express that, mind cannot comprehend that. Sound cannot express that, mind cannot comprehend that, the Brahman. That is the topic. So he is asking here, Brahman, Brahmanya Nirdeshe Nirgune Gunavurtaya, Katham Charandi Shrutaya Sarshal Sadasada Pare. If it is like that, how can Vedam, through its words, discuss Brahman? Vedam is also Shruti, isn't it? Shruti means its sound. And through the sound, how can it describe Brahman? So, Shukla Brahmarshi answers, Buddhi, Indriyam, Manas, Pranam. All the four things. Jananam, Asrijat, Prabhu. Matrarthamcha, Bhavarthamcha, Almane, Agalpanayacha. Buddhi Indriya Mana Pranan Janana Masrajal Prabhu. Krishna Krishna has In order that common, ordinary population can have these four things, which one? Dharmam, Artham, Kamam, Moksham. For these four things, for acquiring that, Krishna gave us intelligence, senses, mind and prana. Four things he has given us. And normally we talked about this, that Shruti wants to discuss this Brahman, which is Nirgunam, which has no attributes, and the very same Shruti talks about the Paramatma in the Vyavaharam stage, Vyavaharika Dasha. And there also we have to see that great statements in the Upanishads, like Tattvamasi and all that, that it makes us aware that Jiva is also a manifestation of that Brahman, which is outside the three modes of material nature. Always you have to remember that Brahman is outside the three modes of material nature, and we are inside the three modes of material nature. So this discussion about this important topic happened in the Janalogam between the Sanakumara Maharshi and the other rishis who are present there, and that is what that topic about the discussion, that how who are inside the Maya, how we can have any relationship with the Brahman, which is outside the Maya, Nirgunam, in other words. So, therefore, Krishna, out of his compassion, has taken Maya along with him and accepted this form of Saguna Brahma. Saguna Brahma means Krishna who is Brahman, who is untouched by Maya, for our convenience, takes a little bit of Maya into him and he becomes Sagunam. He becomes Sagunam. So Saguna Krishna, when he joins Maya, he is called Saguna Brahma. Otherwise he is Nirguna Brahma. When Krishna joins Maya, when we are referring to Krishna, you have to remember, Krishna means the consciousness, bodham, awareness. When it gets a little bit mixture with Maya, he is called Saguna Brahma. So without Maya, Saguna Brahma does not exist. Pure Brahma is Nirgunam. Nirgunam means there is no modes of nature present there. So when Maya, that energy, is manifesting in that form, or Krishna joins that Maya, it becomes Saguna Brahma. Even then, when Krishna becomes like that, you can't imagine that with the mind. You can't imagine that with the mind. So therefore, that Saguna Brahmam, we give a form to that. We give a form to that. So Brahmam, that is how these different forms have come. Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva, all these forms have come in that way. It's a form that we have given to them, that which is in contact with Maya. Which is in contact with Maya. That means you are using the Maya Tattvam for explaining that form. Because there you can see Maya Tattvam means that all that is present inside the Maya. Which means what? Everything that is inside the Maya. Material elements and names and forms here is all combined with the pure consciousness, and a form is given, that is these forms what we are talking about. Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva, and Devi, or Shri Parvati, all forms have come like that. Otherwise, pure consciousness, which is beyond the three modes of material nature, you can't comprehend that in any way. It is not possible. It's not, we can't even develop any relationship with that truth. Generally, for ordinary people's understanding, we'll say God, God, God. Everybody's accepting that. But try to understand that from the point of view of the rishis. Rishis are saying to us that Nirguna Brahman has no modes of nature present there. So for therefore to give a form to it and to explain that is difficult. An ordinary mind and intelligence cannot comprehend that. So that was the question from Parikshit also, in that Shruti Gita begins with that. So how Maya Tattva means everything that is inside this Maya, combine that with that form is Vishnu, what we worship here. In the Sattugunam, Rajogunam, Tamogunam, different forms. So that Maya Tattvam, what is used to develop a form, is discussed in the 12th canto. In the 11th chapter, if you look, you will see there. In the 12th canto, 11th chapter, how, what all Tattvam, Maya Tattvam has been used to develop different forms of Vishnu. Vishnu's different weapons and Vishnu's different parts of the body, that's all there in the 12th canto. If you look in the 12th canto, 11th chapter, this question came up at that time. Where the question was that for the sake of deity worship, Shaunaka Rishi asked this question to Suta Goswami. Adhemamartham prachramo bhavandam bahuvittamam samasta tandraradhande bhavan bhagavada tattvavit. And that Shaunaka Rishi says to Suta Goswami that you know all the tandra siddhantam, all the tandriya vidhi. Can you tell us how these different forms have come about? Tandriya paricharyayam kevalasya shriyapade angobanga idhagalpam kalpayandi yatha chahei. Experts in the tandriya vidhi, they have given certain forms, weapons and decorations, jewelry and other things to the particular form, and how different tattvams, as Maya tattvam, has been used to develop that form. And tanno varnai badram de kriya yogam bubulsadam. Again kriya yogam comes there. Yena kriya naibudena martyo yayad amartyadam. He says here that those who are experts in the tandriya vidhi, those people that how ordinary people, martya, becomes amartya, free from the death. We want to know about that. So, Suta Goswami will start discussing from the verse 4 onwards in the 12th canto of the different ways the different Maya Tattvam has been used in the worship, in the deity worship. So, that we will discuss when we get to that chapter, how that happens. So, our topic now is not that. Our topic is that all that what we have used, just like conch shell, disc, lotus flower and club, they are all Maya Tattvam, is it not? They are not from the Nirguna Brahma. They are from the Maya Tattvam. Conch shell, disc, lotus flower and also the club. Similarly, Kaustubam jewel is a Maya Tattvam. And Krishna carrier, Garuda, is a Maya Tattvam. Maya Tattvam. So all the weapons, Srivalsam, Kaustubham, Vanamala, and then the yellow garment which Vishnu wears, or Krishna wears, that's all Maya Tattvam it is. Similarly, the crown, the jewelry, all these things are Maya Tattvam, and we have given a form to that. And Krishna who manifests, or Vishnu who manifests in this world, combined with all these different Maya Tattvam, and that form we are worshipping. And that form we are worshipping. This is how these forms have come. How did this form come about? We haven't seen Krishna, have we? We haven't seen Vishnu either. And Shastram is saying he has got this four hands. We just accept it. It has got four hands. We start thinking, oh, four-handed form. Or sometimes he's 800 also. When he came to Gajendra, it was 800 form. Sometimes he comes with four hands. So how did these four hands and eight hands all came about? Similarly, when Yogamaya appeared in the, when Krishna appeared in the prison house of Kamsa, and then later on they were exchanged with Yogamaya. Vasudeva Brendan brought Yogamaya from there. Krishna was taken to Nandamaya's house. So in the prison there was Yogamaya. Kamsa came. Kamsa saw this little baby in Devaki Devi's hand, pulled her out and threw her onto the rock. When Kamsa threw her onto the rock, she didn't fall on the rock, she went into the sky. And what happened there? Sayudhashta Mahabhuja, with eight hands, she is standing there. We haven't seen that. We don't have any documentation to prove that there was eight hands there. Well, how did this happen then? How do we know that she had eight hands there? So sometimes eight-handed form, sometimes four-handed form, sometimes two-handed form. All these different forms, how did they come about? This is because when we started this worshipping form, they were created by the rishis using the Maya Tattvam in conjunction with the Nirguna Brahman. Nirguna Brahman combined with Maya Tattvam became what is known as Saguna Brahman. And Saguna Brahman accept these different forms, in the different forms what we are worshipping today. This is the very basic understanding of where deity worship begins. Normally people doesn't bother all that, do they? They just go to the temple, we tell them that this is Krishna. Tomorrow you put another dress on Krishna, they'll say, yes, that's it, Krishna. So is that all Krishna's real dress? But we don't know that. So here what you are seeing now is you're worshipping Krishna combined with Maya Tattvam, Maya's different Tattvam. And Krishna, who is present in front of us, mixed with Maya Tattvam, is the form what we are worshipping. So that, through that Tattvam, Krishna is having a particular form, Vishnu form, or any other form, and in there, he is present in the form of the living force, Chaitanyam, present inside that form. So there, in that form, when you are worshipping, that is Tantriya Vidhi. Tantriyam Vidhi. And knowing that Tantriya Vidhi or Tantriya Upasana, now you get an idea what Tantriyam means. Vaidiyam, Tantriyam, Mishram. So this what we have spoken about is Tantriya Upasana, based on the Tantram. Then there is the Vaidika Upasana, based on the Mantram. That means the different mantram in the Vedic literatures are used in worshipping that form, giving more importance to the mantram side of it. Here, more importance is given to the tantram side of it. Both are very bona fide, fully authorized by Krishna and Lord Shiva in their different instructions. Sri Narada Maharshi, Vedavyas, Brihaspati, they have all authorized it. So everything is bona fide. But these different processes have come, Vaidikam, Tantriyam, and in some temples they use a mixture of both. Which one? Mixture of Vaidikam and Tantriyam. Many places they use the Vaidikam, based on Vaidya process, that means based on Mantram, and many places they use the Tantriyam, based on Tantram, and other places they used Mishram, both. So, but here you can see, when this worship is pratikam, pratikam means that fire. When you are using the Agni, in Agni you are worshipping. At that time, there is no form. Only Agni is present there. Fire is present there. Agni has no form and there is no particular shape or anything like that. But Agni or fire actually represent Krishna's different qualities. That is how Agni has become a representative of Krishna. So in the Vedic times, they used Agni as a representative of Krishna. Krishna's representative was Agni. This, later on, the other forms have come about, but in the Vedic times, The Agni was the form. That is why fire sacrifice began with that. So anything that reminds us of Krishna, reminds us of the Absolute Truth, that is representing Krishna. But how did Agni become representative of Krishna? Because Agni always grows upwards. Words upwards, when the fire burns, isn't it? And Agni is also representative of illumination and light. Illumination and light. Heat and light is Agni's form. Heat and light is Agni's form. So, Prakasham, what we say that it has this nature of removing darkness. Just like Krishna is knowledge, isn't it? Remember in the Bhagavatam? Vadandida tattuvidam tattvam yat jnanam advayam. Advaya jnanam is Krishna. So, jnanam has got this capacity to remove the ignorance, just like Agni has got the capacity to remove the darkness. And the flame of the Agni is always going up. It has a tendency to go up. So, this is all coming from the rishis, great rishis. It's their sankalpam, this is, all this. They are the personalities who introduced deity worship, the rishis. So it's from their sankalpam all this has come about. So according to the rishis understand, rishis sankalpam is that everything in the higher level is auspicious. Everything in the lower level is inauspicious. That is why heavenly planets are on the higher level, higher platform, and hellish planets are on the lower level. This has all come from that concept. So this flame that goes from the fire, they develop all the auspicious qualities in a person, and it is the seat of all the divine qualities as well, and it reminds us of the higher power, higher authority present in this creation. So, all auspicious qualities are present in Krishna, in the truth. Therefore, you will see a word used, Ananda Kalyana Gunarnava, about Krishna. Ananda Kalyana Gunarnava. Ananda Kalyana Guna means all auspicious qualities combined together is present in Krishna. So, Agni burns everything. Similarly, Agni never gets impure. Agni never gets impure. No matter how impure a particular vastu is, that if you put that into the fire, it turns into ashes. It turns into ashes. But at the same time, fire, Agni, doesn't get impure. Agni burns it, but Agni is not impure. It's always pure. It remains as pure. Similarly, you have to understand that fire is always pure. Fire is always pure. Similarly, Krishna, who is present in all creation, Krishna is present in all creation. Even though Krishna is present everywhere, nothing is sticking to Krishna. Krishna is pure, never touched by anything in the creation. So therefore, Krishna is also like fire, always pure, always very pure. In other words, if you mention this in a different way, that those of us who are engaged in sadhana, in spiritual life, we have got a lot of bad vasanas in us. We go and pay our respects and offerings to Krishna. So Krishna is accepting our offering. And if Krishna is accepting our offering, means our bad vasanas also goes with that offering to Krishna, isn't it? We are impure. We are not pure. We have a lot of impurities inside. So when we engage in worship, when we make any offering to Krishna, on a subtle level, all our bad vasanas also goes along with that to Krishna. But when Krishna gets it, Krishna is not affected by that. Everything gets burned there like the fire. When you offer something to the fire, fire accepts it. It turns into ashes, but fire is never affected by that. Similarly, Krishna, who is Nirgunam, we are in Maya. We are under the modes of material nature. We have a lot of impurities in us. If Krishna is accepting things from us, we are making offerings to Krishna, various things. In there, in a certain level, our bad vasanas will also go. There's nothing you can do about it. Our bad vasanas, for example, pride, our arrogance, our lust, anger, and selfishness, our all kinds of bad vasanas, what is inside us, rishis knew this very well, that we just don't have access to Krishna in that way, pure form. We can't relate with Krishna in a pure level, because we are not pure. So when you are making the offering to Krishna, all that person's bad qualities also will go along with that to Krishna. So that, but because Krishna is pure, like fire, nothing will touch him. Everything get burned. Our bad vasanas also get burned there. So although Krishna is continuously collecting all our bad vasanas constantly, is there any damage to Krishna? Nothing. Nothing happens to Krishna. So all that bad vasanas gets burned in the fire of knowledge. Remember, Krishna mentions this in the Bhagavad Gita. Jnana agni sarva karmanam basmasad kurute arjuna, he says there in the fourth chapter, I think. Yeah. Jnana agni sarva karmanam basmasad kurute arjuna. That is what that means. Jnana agni, in the power of knowledge, all karma what we do, sarva karmanam basmasad, it turns into ashes. That means our karmam and the karma vasana, what is in us, all gets burned in that fire of knowledge. Jnana agni sarva karmanam bhasmasad kurade arjuna. Krishna says there, isn't it? So, in Krishna, this knowledge, fire of knowledge is burning all the time. It's always burning there. And in us, all our bad vasanas are there. When the bad vasanas are offered to Krishna, that vasanas all get burned in that fire of knowledge. Fire of knowledge. So therefore, no matter whatever association with us is not a good thing, because we've got all the impure things in us. And even though Krishna is accepting all our offerings, it does not affect Krishna. It does not affect Krishna. Krishna is always pure. Krishna is always pure. So, in this way, this is how it is from all these situations that Agni has become as a symbol of worship. Symbol of worship. So, therefore, Agni has been used as a symbol of worship long, long before deity worship, the way it's now, has started. Agni was the process of where everything was offered. And all the, if you look back into the history, you will see that Vedic times, much way before the Vigraha Upasana or deity worship has begun now, way before that, the Brahminical culture was centered around Agni. Centered around Agni. Agni Upasana. That was their main worship. So, and that worship, so homam, offering things to the Agni. And Agni, they had different classifications for the fire. So that is the original Vedic way of worship through Agni. Agni is the original Vedic form of worship. And that was a very simple form. All brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, all three of them, brahmachari, grihastham and vanaprastham, all three of them, they do Agni Upasana. Sannyasis don't. For sannyasi, they are released already. So brahmachari, grihastham and vanaprastham, all three of them have their own way of Agni Upasana. Agni Upasana means this service to Agni. So, there, in that Agni, a form is worship, form of Vishnu or Krishna is worship, and or you can worship as Agni itself, as representative of Vishnu. And so, In the traditionally in the olden times, way before this deity worship, there is a particular plant, and the grass they collect from the like the dharba grass or kusha grass. Along with that, they take this plant and its stem there, and they offer that into the fire. And the brahmachari prays to the fire, addressing the fire, that please give me good intelligence. Please give me good intelligence. Help me to develop Shraddha. Help me to develop Metha Shakti. So, and to get all that strengthened inside, he is praying to the form, that form of Agni. His prayers are like, Brahmachari is praying to the form of Agni, prayers, give me the strength of Metha Suktam, is chanted at that time. Or Shraddha Suktam is chanted, to develop Shraddha and to develop Metha Shakti. That is what the Brahmachari is looking for. So he is praying there at that time, and that is Brahmachari's Agni Upasana. That is his deity worship. Brahmachari's deity worship is like that. That through Shri Suktam, Shraddha Suktam, Metha Suktam, chanting these Vedic hymns and offering the Dharbha or Kusha grass along with plash, they call it. There is a plant whose stem they cut it off into pieces and they take it and they offer it that into the fire while chanting these hymns. This is how Brahmachari's worship started in the Vedic times. When he became a grihastha, at the time of marriage, he has a fire to be created for him. And from the time of when the brahmachari becomes a grihastha, it is brahmachari who becomes a grihastha later. So at the time of marriage, for the sake of offering things into the fire, there is a particular agni has been created for that purpose. And when that fire, when the ceremony is over, the fire is brought back into this piece of wood called plasha and this kusha grass, and then it is called ajyam. Avahanam, from there, avahanam means invoking that from the fire, agni, into this piece of wood and the grass, and that is called ajyam. And that allows that, then allow the agni to continuously keep going. And that is actually connected with the marriage ceremony. And the rule is, he has to keep that fire burning for the rest of this life, till the death. He has to keep that fire going. And every single day, grihastha has to make the offering into that fire. This is all in the Vedic times, way before deity worship has started. This is how worship started. All this worship is external. That also you have to remember. External worship, you can say. Internal worship is different. So, it is in that fire that grihastha every single day makes the offering into that fire. So, in one house, say there are three or four householders. In those days, that's how they lived. Many householders lived in one home. So when they lived in one house, every single householder will have his own fire brought from his own marriage ceremony. That fire. So that means in single home, in one home, there is four or five householders living, means four or five fires will be going on continuously. Fires will be going on continuously. Four different places, they'll keep the four different fires. And it is from this fire, when the particular householder, when he goes to Vanaprastha Ashramam, he has to take that particular fire which he was performing upasana, where he was doing his upasana. And from there he takes the flame and go for Vanaprastham. And eventually when he leaves his body, it is from that fire they set fire to his body. You can't bring any fire from anywhere and set fire. Now it's more sophisticated with the crematorium, isn't it? Very simple process, all packaged nicely. And something going on anyway. What can we say more than that? If you say if it is Vedic, I don't know. All the answer I can say is, Vedic times this was, there are some rules like this. That Brahmachari had a fire. Marriage time, if he becomes, goes into married life, if he becomes a grihastha, then from that, how they conducted married life, in what a higher level they viewed at it, grihastha ashram. That is what you have to understand from this. They didn't make it as a license for sense gratification. Householder life was never treated as a license for sense gratification. In the modern world it is very much like that, isn't it? Everybody wants to become a householder, and householder life is the only most glorified life in this world. But whatever it may be, from the point of view of the Vedic times, if you look back, you can see from Brahmachari life, when they come to householder life, they had to have this special fire created for that purpose. And in that fire, he has to make the offering every single day. And that is exclusively for that particular householder, which he has to carry through every single day, right through his life. And when he leaves his body, it has to be set fire with the fire that he has been worshipping throughout his life. That is how it is so closely related with that. So, Brahmachari, say for example, Brahmacharis are living, 10 or 15 people in a house, for them they need only one fire. One fire is enough. Householder must have a separate fire. That's the rule. Brahmachari can have one fire. All Brahmacharis can make their offering to that one fire. But if you become a householder, you should have a separate fire of your own. So in the Brahmachari system, one Brahmachari can offer whatever he had to offer, and then the next Brahmachari can make offering to the same fire. But Grahastha is not allowed. For a householder, it's not allowed. Grahastha, whatever fire he has created, and after his marriage, he has to regularly chant the mantram, what has been given to him, and he has to make the homam into that fire. And that is also a very simple process. Very simple process. So, twice a day, minimum, the grahastha has to perform Agni Upasana. Agni Upasana. Worship of the Agni. He has to do twice a day. And apart from that, there is other responsibilities also for the grahastha. But that will come in the Varnashrama Dharma, where grahastha has to do such things. That's discussed in that. But here we are not discussing that. We are only discussing about the history of the deity worship, how that has come into practice as it is today. So, so in that Agni, this householder will have to perform many, many sacrifices in that Agni during his householder life. During his householder life. Many, many karma that he has to perform there. So, in course of time, some of these householders, some of these grihasthas, in course of time, these grihasthas, they have performed the Agniadhanam. It is called Agniadhanam. If Agniadhanam is performed for a long period of time, they become what is called Agnihotri. Agnihotri title is given. Agni worship, Agniadhanam. They perform Agniadhanam for a long period of time, they become Agnihotri. And up to this time, he had only one fire. Eka Agni, one fire. It is called Eka Agni. And in one Agni, when he is engaged as a Agni, performs his Agniadhanam, and in one fire, he does all his offerings. But when he becomes Agnihotri, it has become Treta Agni. That means he has three fires. He had only one fire before, when he was Agni, and now when he was Eka Agni, and now he has become into three. And that is how Tridagni has come. Three Agnis. And he is called as Agnihotri. Agnihotri, you will see this title many places. Still people have these names, Agnihotri and all. But actually Agnihotri means one who has performed Agniadhanam for a long period of time. And he has these three different places fire is burning. Three kundam, they call it. Agni kundam. Three different places, fire is burning, and therefore he is called Treta Agni. And they have name for that. Ahavini Agni, Garhavati Agni, Anvaya Agni. There is a three names for the three different fires for the particular Agnihotri. Agnihotri. This is what existed in the Vedic times, way before deity worship started. This was the form of worship. That is why even today there are many Brahmanas who, if you go back into their tradition, they are not experts in deity worship, but they are experts in the Vaidika tradition. Their tradition is this. Only some of them later on took to deity worship in the way, took to this worship of the deity in the temples, and they came in a different way, came about that. But way back, all these things, it was Agni that was worshipped. So, Ahavini Agni, so these three Agnis that has come about, Ahavini Agni and Garhavati Agni and Anvay Agni, those three fires has come about. So, Ahavini Agni, that is where he performs this after that, when he has Agnihotri stage. In the Ahavini Agni is all the Havis is offered. Havisa means all the different preparations. For example, he is chanting the Vedam regularly. Regularly he chants the Vedam. Rigvedis chant the Rigvedam. Yajurvedis chant the Yajurvedam. Samavedis chant the Samavedam. So all of these Agnihotris, they chant the different Vedic hymns and they offer their Havisa made of ghee, everything into this fire. This is their worship, process of worship. Chanting the Vedic hymns and offering the Havisa, which is prepared for the offering into the fire. Chanting the Vedic hymns, they offer into the fire, and that process is called the Agni Upasana, or which is done in the this particular Agni called Ahavini Agni. Ahavini Agni. Garhavasti Agni is where you prepare the Havisa. Now they have made three. Garhapati Agni, you prepare the Havisa in that. Havisa is the one that you prepare for offering into the fire. Homam is not performed in the Garhapati Agni. Garhapati Agni. And the third one, Anava Agni, there suppose some prayaschitam has to be performed. Or some mistakes happened in life. Some faults happened. Sometimes it happens. That due to not being alert, conscious all the time, because their life was very, very pure. They lived their life very higher level, isn't it? Purity they maintained in their daily life. So they had very rigidly they followed the rules and regulations at that time. Very rigidly they followed. And therefore they were conscious that if any instructions or any injunctions based on the Rishi's instructions, if anything they have not followed, then they have to perform prayaschitam for that, atonement for that. And or any problem happens, that for example they followed the rules regarding the cleanliness and purity of the house, impurity way of life in the house, some death happened, certain days of impure life that they had to keep away from certain situations, isn't it? So, and similarly, when women had their times, bad times, so they also had to follow all that. Suppose by chance anything mistake happened there, then they have to perform prayaschitam for that. For this third fire, what is called Anumati Agni, was used. So, Ahavini Agni was there, and then there the Garhavati Agni, and then the Anumati Agni, last one. So this Grahastha, who was Ega Agni, who had only one fire, when he becomes Agnihotri, he has received what is known as Trayada Agni. Three Agnis have come to him. So now once he has become Agnihotri, then he is allowed to perform Yagam. He is allowed to perform Yagam or sacrifice. Which Yagam means what? Say for example, Ashwamedham, Rajasuyam, Agnishtomam, Vajapayam. These are all famous Yagam. And only if you have become Agnihotri, you can perform this famous Yagam. And it is this Yagam that was existence in the Treta Yuga. And this all started in the time of Purvaravas, whom we discussed yesterday. So that you will see in that 9th canto, 14th chapter, the last verses. Purvaravas time, yagam started. Prior to that, yagam didn't exist. Only sacrifice in the fire. But Agnihotris, the rishis, brought some changes in the system. For Tretayugam, seeing the nature of the people and their variations in their capacity to engage in spiritual life, they became more. What happened was, from Satyugam to Tretayugam, people's Shraddha or people's attention started going outwardly instead of being inward. In Satyugam, people had very inward looking nature. That means that they were so focused about self-realization and they were conscious about the truth which is present inside. As time went on, from Satyugam to Tretayugam, they became more external. External means getting attracted by the world to some extent. Up to that time, there was no attraction to the world. They were more inward, very inward looking. Their world was inside. By Tretayugam, the attention fell outwardly and more attention in the world outside, more than Satyugam. So seeing the change in the human nature, the rishis brought about this change of the process of worship also. And that is how yagam started. And that you can see that the change in Puriravas itself. Puriravas himself had lost it, isn't it? And from Puriravas time onwards, many, many great personalities, when they ruled this planet, yagam or sacrifices became the process of worship of the truth. And that is why for whole of Tretayugam, the process of worship is through sacrifices, through yagam. Yagam was the process. And yagam requires people who are highly qualified, who have practiced this process of performing, rigidly followed the rules, and they should be Agnihotris. And those who have studied Vedam very well, and who can chant the Vedic hymns properly, and those who knows all the subtle side of the performing these sacrifices. You can see in the Bhagavatam, Prithu Maharaj performed yagam. Many, many yagam. 99 Ashwamedha yagam Prithu Maharaj performed. It is in the 100th Ashwamedham, Indra got upset with him and came to disturb the yagam. You see that in the 4th canto of the Bhagavatam. Similarly, you can see also in the case of Mahabali, when he was performing his yagam, Ashwamedham, again Ashwamedham. Of all the yagam, Ashwamedham is considered to be one of the top yagam process, name of the yagam, what they perform. Yudhishthira Maharaj performed Ashwamedham. All of them performed Ashwamedham. Rajasuyam is one of the most difficult one, and very few people have performed Rajasuyam. From the Puranam you find Varuna has performed Rajasuyam. Yudhishthira Maharaj has performed Rajasuyam. And there is another instance, Moon has performed Rajasuyam. So there's only great, great personalities like them who can perform Rajasuyam. Rajasuyam lasts a long time and requires the support of so many other people involved in that. So yagam became the process during the Tretayugam. Yagam became the process. So then there is Somayagam, you will see. Somayagam is performed many. Adinatram, Somayagam, all these things you will find performed. If you want to know, see some of them, you can have them on the internet. It's there, they have put on the recent Somayagams they have performed and how they were done, and there is a lengthy description of that and how the special place was selected. They had to plow the land and the yajamanin or the person who is performing that and his wife, they have to have a very long period of celibate life, and also they have to remain free from any kind of contamination from the world outside. So that grihastha who has performed this fire, offering into the fire, he becomes a vanaprastham later. He becomes a vanaprastham. And when he goes into vanaprastham stage, he goes to the forest and he has to carry this fire with him to the forest. Or if he goes and lives in an ashram in the forest, this fire he has to keep burning there in that ashram during his vanaprastha life. And keeping that fire, he has to perform his austerities and penances. Remember all the austerities and penances mentioned in the Bhagavatam for brahmachari, grihastham, vanaprastham, sannyasam. This all refers to that period. Very, very severe they are, aren't they? If you read them. There is no grihastha like that today. And there is no vanaprastha like that today. And there is no sannyasi also like that today. Is there? The sannyasi, if you read that description, what Krishna is talking about, which we looked at earlier in the 11th canto, that sannyasi's way of life doesn't exist in the modern world. It's not possible. And that kind of vanaprastha is also not there. That kind of grihastha is also not there. That kind of brahmachari is also not there. That this all, what is written in the Bhagavatam, refers to that period in the Vedic times, how a brahmachari lived, how a grihastha lived, how a vanaprastha lived, how a sannyasi lived, and how they progressed from one to another. Today's brahmachari, grihastham, vanaprastham, sannyasam and all is a very watered down version of the original one. Very much so. Today we think, he's a brahmachari because he's wearing saffron. That's only quality for the brahmachari because he's wearing a saffron in a particular way. Sannyasi is in another way. But beyond than that doesn't mean much, very much than that. So anyway, important thing here is that so this agni, what he has to perform for his austerities, that normally yogurt is used at that time for making the offering to the fire, or into the fire. So this is a Vaidika Upasana. So this grihastha who is performing this, that is one of his responsibility, and it is called Upasanam. Upasanam it is called. And the fire that is coming from there is called Upasana Agni. Upasana Agni, where he performs his Upasana. So, and all these things takes about 10 minutes for him to do it on a daily basis. And if the householder is not there, his wife is allowed to do that. She can do that. And if she is also not available, then somebody else can do that at that particular time into the fire. But it doesn't take very long time. Why I'm saying that is, the process of worship in them days were simpler compared to the deity worship of today. Later on, deity worship came. So the Vaidika Upasana is very practical and very simple also. And then they started worshipping worshipping the sun planet. Started worshipping there. So Surya Upasana and Agni Upasana, these two Upasanas, worshipping the presence of that living force in both. This is how that started. So, so the difference here is, Agni Upasana, or your Upasana in the fire, is karmam, based on karmam that you have to perform it. Whereas Surya Upasana is based on meditation and based on chanting the mantra. That is how you perform the Upasana for the sun. For performing the Upasana for sun, you require the mantra and you require the meditation for that. Whereas here, more importance is on the karma, Agni Upasana. So, why sun? Because sun is the source of all the energy. All the energy. Always present in this world, who is the very basis of our existence here in this world. And so all forces, all power comes from the truth, from the truth. And very nature of the absolute truth is pure knowledge. Pure knowledge. So for our own existence, the very basis of our existence is due to the presence of that living force. Presence of that living force. So this very creation itself is existing due to the sangalpam of Ishvara. Ishvara sangalpam. Krishna sangalpam is that this creation should exist in the way it is existing now. So, because the Surya Bhagavan or sun, the Lord who is present in the sun planet, he he has qualities of Krishna present in him to a large degree. Therefore, he is accepted as a representative of Krishna. Representative of Krishna. And all these things are directly manifested in front of us. Agni, Suryam, all these things. So, therefore, chanting Gayatri for worshipping the sun. For worshipping the sun. So, Gayatri Upasana is Surya Upasana. Chanting the Gayatri and worshipping the sun. That is what is called Surya Upasana. And so, as much as one can do, that much is good. Therefore, traditionally, many Brahmanas chanted Gayatri and they worship the sun. Seriously, because through Gayatri you worship Supreme Lord who is present in the sun. Who is present in the sun. So that is their basic worship. For them, the main worship is Gayatri, chanting the Gayatri, which is more stressed on the Japam as well as Dhyanam. Dhyanam of Vishnu present in the Surya and also chanting the Gayatri. And you can see in the prayers to sun, Gayatri Mantram, if you look at it, you will see there that the whole thing is addressed to the Supreme Lord who is present in the sun planet, praying to him to improve my intelligence. Dhiyo yona prachodayat, isn't it? Dhiyo yona Dhiyo means intelligence. To improve my intelligence is the prayer in the Gayatri. To improve my intelligence. In other words, if my intelligence is in the mood of goodness, Satvikam, Satvikam mood, only then it will go in the right direction. It will turn into the right way of doing things, right things in life, not to act in the wrong way. So, to turn my intelligence in the proper directions, in the Satvikam mood, in the mood of goodness, you require this mercy of the Supreme Truth who is present in the sun planet. So while chanting the Gayatri, if you look at the Gayatri Mantram, if you look at the meaning of that, you will see there that addressing sun, you are praying to him for purifying your intelligence and to direct the intelligence in the Satya way, in the mode of goodness. So only if the mode of goodness is present, if your intelligence is in the mode of goodness, good thoughts will develop inside. Only if the good thought develops inside, good thoughts develop inside, only then good words will come out from the mouth. Come out from the mouth. And if the good words come from the mouth, it will turn into good actions in life. Good actions in life. In this way, the thought, the word and the action, all of them is controlled by the intelligence. Intelligence controls all of them. So therefore it is so important that buddhi or intelligence must be satvikam. It should be in the mode of goodness. So in order to purify this intelligence, that prayer is Gayatri. Gayatri is that prayer. So not only that, if our material life also, if it has to be peaceful, first our intelligence has to become pure. It has to be pure. And that buddhi and has to turn towards self-realization, towards self-realization or spiritual life. And for that, buddhi has to become pure. So in this way, two things, abhyudayam nishrayasam, Shastram says two words, abhyudayam nishrayasam, and finally liberation. For both of these things, mukti, the buddhi has to become pure, pure intelligence. And for that purpose, Gayatri was instituted. So, through Gayatri, you are worshipping the sun. Similarly, through Homam, you are worshipping the Agni. And this is what is known as proper Vaidika Upasana. Vedic times Upasana is these two. Worshipping through Homam, the Agni, and worshipping through Gayatri, the sun. This is what was in existence way before. I'm talking about external worship. All these are external worship. In the external worship, way before the deity worship as it present currently present in this world started, these two were the process of worship. Gayatri Upasana towards the sun, and homam performed in the agni, in the fire. And then much later, in Tridayugam, it carried on in this way with Yajnam and Yagam. That was the main stress was given on that. Yagam, which you can read in the Puranams also, you will find spoken about this Yagam. But when Dwapara Yugam came, the rishis have seen that things have further deteriorated. Even the simple worship of the process of worship of the Agni Upasana, they have become weak. Because people who are studying the Vedam and who are practicing the chanting of the Vedam and maintaining that standard, and their purity and inward-looking nature is all changing, breaking up. They are becoming weaker and weaker. And they are losing their strength in the spiritual life. They are practically, whole human population. You have to remember this. Vedam is spoken to the whole world. It is not spoken to India or to Europe or to America. It is to the whole world. At that time, none of these new religions were there. You can't even talk about Christianity, Islam, or any other religion in this world. We have this misconception in our mind, oh, this is another religion like any other religion in this world. It is not. In the Vedic times, there is only one way of life based on the Vedam and the Shastram. Everybody followed that in different levels, at different places. And that is why you will see so many ways of proving that, even today, that this way of life existed in everywhere else in the world, Vedic way of life. Paramacharya mentions about this, that you remember in the ninth canto of Bhagavatam, that Kapila Maharshi performed this, Kapila Maharshi had his ashram, and he was performing his sacrifices there. So when Amshuman had this horse, which was tied, they were performing a sacrifice in Bharatavarsham at that time to bring Ganga River to this planet. So at that time, the horse escaped and somebody took the horse to Kapila Maharshi's ashram and tied down there. Later on, searching for this horse, they went all around the planet and they got to Kapila Maharshi's ashram. And the place where Kapila Maharshi had this ashram, that Kapilashramam is one what is today called as California in America. Kapilashramam has become California today. There is other proof to that, because if you look, you will see there is an ash island there. And it is an ash island where the horse was, where when they went looking for this horse, they saw Kapila Maharshi there. And Kapila Maharshi opened his eyes in the fire that emitted from their eyes. These people who went looking for them, they got burnt into ashes. They burnt into ashes. And that is that ash island in California. So Kapilashramam became California, and ash island is nothing but the place where these people personalities got burned. So like this, all over the world, there are examples that Vaidika Samskaram or Vedic philosophy and culture, when it existed all over. But later on, in course of time, things changed. And then it brought people, moved away from the Vedic tradition, and people started doing different things, and then personalities came, and they started introducing their own process of religions, and that is how various types of religions have come about later in this world. Prior to that, none of this existed. We are talking about those days, way before this deity worship, or even the other religious processes have come to this world. Way before that, we are talking about that time. That's the time. So worshipping this form at home, in this way today now, deity worship has happened. All this has come about much later. So rishis noticed that as Dwapara Yugam came, they realized that even this yajnam, yagam, all these things are not anymore practical for the people. Apart from that, the capacity what they had in the Satyugam was not there in the Tridayugam. The strength they had in the Satyugam in spiritual life, look at the people in the Satyugam, how they were, how strong they were spiritually. They could perform such a severe austerities and absorbed in the meditation for many, many years they could stay. And their body also was similarly different. Body had a much more strength in performing these penances. You will see them mention Astigada Pranam, Rudhiragada Pranam, all mentioned there. Astigada Pranam means they can perform austerity to such extent that simply the bones were left in the body. If you will read that in the Hiranyakashipu's austerity, that thousands of years they performed austerities, and a boy like Dhruva Maharaj, he could go and perform penances for 6 months without eating, without drinking water, and sometimes not even eating any leaves, or simply by taking air inside, he performed penances. That strength was there in the Satyugam, among the people. So the people's strength also you have to take into account. It is on that principle that, and also their inner strength, so to say the inner strength, that strength of spirituality in them was much more than what is in the, even in the Tridayugam had. So that is why times changed from Satyugam to Tridayugam. Rishis modified the form of worship to Yajnam and Yagam in the Tridayugam. But when it came to Dwapara Yugam, they noticed that things have further deteriorated. And that is why in Dwapara Yugam, deity worship became prominent. So what else happened to that? It is in Dwapara Yugam also you can see that other ways of religious processes slowly started creeping in into this, into the Vedic system. So many unauthorized and not accepted by the Vedic tradition, they have come into existence. And you can see in the during the Buddha's time, they completely stopped all the Yagam sacrifices, everything. Because they influenced the kings who ruled. Buddhism was spread all over. Bharatavarsham was spread all over. And Buddhism not only spread whole of China, Japan and so many other countries. Buddhism has gone. And the kings all accepted Buddhism at that time. So when they accepted Buddhism, then they stopped this because of the strength of Buddhism. And Buddhism was accepted by the higher society, especially the kings who ruled this world. There was no democracy at that time. It was all kings who were ruling everywhere. So all the kings accepted Buddhism. With the result was that all over, this Yajnam Yagam was all completely stopped. It was come to a dead end. So it was at that time, the personalities who were controlling the spiritual side, they gave the instructions to turn that in another form, and Kshetra Upasana became stronger. The worship of the temple worship has become stronger. That was not objected by the kings. Kings objected because kings saw Vedic culture through the Yajnam and Yagam. They didn't consider deity worship as, because deity worship was not existing before that. So many of those kings who went against deity worship, is much later that comes, but at that particular time, their objection was towards Yajnam and Yagam. So they were stopped. So the rishis, knowing well the situation, people have become more external, and they started introducing this, what is called the temple worship. And you can see this in that verse in the Bhagavatam. Kriteja dhyayate Vishnu. In Kritayugam, dhyanam of Vishnu was the process. Tridayam yajato makhai. In Tridayugam, yajnam or yagam was the process. Dwapare parijaryayam. In Dwaparayugam, deity worship was the process. And finally, kalautad harikirtanal. In Kaliyugam, glorifying Krishna. Harikirtanam includes everything. Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, Sankirtanam, chanting the holy name. This is all harikirtanam. Glorifying Hari. Nothing but glorifying Hari, Krishna. That is the process for Kaliyuga. So this is there in the Bhagavatam. Shukha Brahmarshi himself says this. Kriteja dhyayate Vishnu. Tretayam yajato makhe. Dwapare parijaryayam. Kalautad harikirtanal. That when we have become more and more outwardly, external, that means our capacity for inward looking, we have lost it. Tretayugam already they were losing it. Dwapara Yugam they got further, worse. And by Kali Yugam people have completely more or less lost that capacity to look inwards. They become more external. So therefore, Harikirtanam is the process for the Kali Yugam. It is there and they mentioned in the Bhagavatam also. So this Kshetram and Kshetra Upasana is a later thing in the Vaidika system. Because we have to look back into the whole tradition, way back. Not starting from 500 years or 1000 years or 2000 years. This we are talking about millions of years way back, where it began, so from Satyayugam onwards. So Satyayugam, Traidayugam, and in the Dwaparayugam, temple worship has begun. And the temple worship has started. You will see there that it is not 100% Vaidikam in that sense. 100% it's not Vaidikam. For example, if you look into Mahabharatam, you will see there is no reference to temples very much. What it refers to is holy places. Is it not? Like, they refer to holy places. You can't say completely it's not there. There is very few, one or two places they have mentioned to temples also. But it's very limited. Very limited. Majority of references is towards the holy places. Holy places. And by the time Bhagavatam came, temples have come into it. Temples have come to it. But in Mahabharatam, it's more reference to Tirtham. For example, if you think about Benares, Benares is considered to be a holy place. Benares is not popular due to Lord Shiva's temple there. Kashi Visheshwara temple is there. And people think that because of the presence of Lord Shiva there, Benares is popular. Benares is not popular because of the presence of Lord Shiva's temple there. Benares is popular because of the presence of Ganga Devi there. Ganga River presence there. And therefore Kashi is called Tirthasthanam. Tirthasnanam. For Tirthasnanam is important in Benares. Bathing in Ganga in Kashi is given importance. And building temple was built later. Benares Vishwanath temple was built much later. And it became prominent, the temple became prominent because in the Benares, in the river bank of Ganga, that temple was built. But way before that temple was built, Benares was still popular. And the popularity of the Benares was known only for this reason, because Ganga Devi present in Benares on Kashi, where it is called, is a place for, is a tirtham, considered to be a tirtham. So similarly, Prabhasam in Gujarat is a place. Prabhasam is a place. Temple was not given the importance. Other temples have come there much later. When Krishna asked the Yadavas to go there finally and perform the various austerities and penances. So Prabhasam at that time was a tirthasnanam, tirtha place it is. It's not a place where because of the temple was present there. Temple came much later. So if you look in this way, tirtham, all places, Kurukshetram is a tirtham there. Similarly, all other, Haridwaram, Rishikesh, all places if you look, Prayag for example, temple has come much later. But long, long before the temples have come into existence, Kumbh Mela was there. Kumbh Mela was in existence. So, because it was a Tirthasnanam. Similarly, Haridwar, Ujjain, and all places, wherever Kumbh Mela happens, you can see this, they existed way before the temples have come there. Temples came much later. So, Tirthasnanam, Kumbh Mela, all these things are existed way before the temples and the deity worship has happened. So, Tirthobhasana, that now you can understand that how this temple worship has become a part of the Vedic tradition, that even you have difficulties here to understand some things. Say for example, Sankhya philosophy, Sankhya Darshanam, isn't it? This Sankhya Darshanam does not have any authorized book for the Sankhya. For example, you can look at this way, then all other darshanam, for example, Sankhyam, Nyayam, Yogam, Vaisheshikam, Purvamimamsa, Uttaramimamsa. Sankhya, Nyayam, Yogam, Vaisheshikam, Purvamimamsa, Uttaramimamsa. This is the six different philosophical schools of thought existed from time long, long before, the Rishi's time. So there, except this Sankhyam, all others have got one code book available in the coded form. See, for example, Vedantam has got Brahma Sutra. Vedavyasa Maharshi's Vedantam has got Brahma Sutra. Similarly, Patanjali has, Ashtanga Yoga has got Yoga Sutra. It's in Patanjali's Yoga Sutra. That is the authorized version of the Patanjali's teachings, Yoga Sutra. Vedanta Sutra is for Vedavyasa Maharshi's teachings. And similarly, Gautama Maharshi, he created the Nyaya philosophy. And Nyaya Sutram is there, a book which tells about the logic and the Nyaya Sutram of Gautama Maharshi. And similarly, Kanada Maharshi, his Vaisheshika Sutram, is the Vaisheshika philosophy, comes through Vaisheshika Sutram. So, Vaisheshika Sutram, Nyaya Sutram, Vedanta Sutram, Yoga Sutram, and Brahma Sutram. All these sutrams existed for all the five different philosophical schools of thought, except for the Sankhya philosophy. When it came to Sankhya philosophy, what happened was, Sankhyam, what was spoken by Kapila Maharshi, what is accepted in the Bhagavad Gita, in the Bhagavadam, is Ishvara Sankhyam. Seshvara Sankhyam it's called. Seshvara Sankhyam. Where the absolute truth is accepted as the person and worshipped in that form. But there is one Ishvara Krishna who wrote what is known as Nirishvara Sankhyam, which is more prominent in one way. But that Sankhya Karika, which is called a book, that is the authorized version of that Sankhya Sutram. But that is not taken either in the Bhagavadam or in the Mahabharatam or in the Bhagavad Gita. You can see when Krishna took Sankhyam, he took from Kapila Maharshi's side. What is acceptable to Vedantam, that is what you see in the Bhagavad Gita and in the Srimad Bhagavatam. If you do not take all these things into your understanding, you are simply starting with Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam. And if you do not know the background where it has come from, if somebody asks you anything about it, you haven't got any answer. What will you say to them? So that is why it's important to know these things. That where is this coming from? Important to know the background of all these Vedic literature. Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, when Krishna combined Bhagavad Gita, Krishna brought this Bhagavad Gita as a package to us, he took Sankhyam. Sankhyam from Kapila Maharshi's Sankhyam. That's what you find in the Sankhya Yoga, in the Bhagavad Gita. Similarly, in Ekadasha Skandam, Krishna has brought Sankhyam there also. So that Sankhyam is coming from Kapila Maharshi's line, not from the Ishvara Krishna's Nirishvara Sankhyam. So Sankhyam, which comes through Kapila Maharshi, is in accordance with the Vedantam and therefore it is acceptable. Sankhyam in the line of Ishvara Krishna is not in line with the Vedantam, therefore it's not acceptable. So all these things are behind that. So here, Mahabharatam also talks about Sankhyam. So this Sankhya Karika, what is present there, and that is Nirishvaram. Nirishvaram means atheistic. When we say atheistic, also you have to know what that means. Atheistic means that Pradhanam exists and from there creation has come. Mahatattvam, Pradhanam, all that what you find in other Sankhya philosophy exists there also. But that oneness of the Purusha, that is not present there. For example, in Mahabharatam and the Srimad Bhagavatam, Nirishvara Sankhyam or atheistic Sankhyam is not recognized. Why? Because it doesn't agree with the Vedantam. So one of the reasons why the Nirishvara Sankhyam became prominent, because it was influenced by Buddhism also. Now, Buddha, whom we refer to as Buddha, who appeared 2500 years ago, some person, acharyas are saying it is not reference to that Buddha. This Buddha whom we refer to in the... There was another Buddha who appeared in way before. And that influence also... Yeah, because this Buddha, according to our calculations, about 2500 years ago, this Gautama Buddha appeared. But way before that, there was another Buddha, they say. And Bauddha Darshanam, Buddha's philosophy is... That Buddha's philosophy has influenced Ishvara Krishna. Or even if you accept that it is the new modern Buddha's influence of Ishvara Krishna has created this Nirishvara Sankhyam, you have to take it that this Nirishvara Sankhyam, which Ishvara Krishna has propounded, is of a very recent literature. That means only 2500 years old, not older than that. But Kapila Maharshi's Sankhyam is way before than that, much before than that. And that's why it's coming to Bhagavatam, which is 5000 years old, isn't it? So, so Sankhya Arya, so, so Buddhism was very prominent. It was present everywhere throughout the country. And through the influence of the kings, they worked their way through the Vedic philosophy. They tried to destroy all the Vedic karma in that way. So Vaidika karma stopped. That way it has come to a stop. And then the result of that, Yagam, Homam, all these things came to an end. Came to an end. It is at that time they modified all that process of worship, and then it has turned out to be in the form of deity worship today. In the form of deity worship today. So that is why the Shastram, what was developed around about the deity worship, is also not that old. It's not that old. So Rishis, what they have done was based on the Maya Tattvam, different Maya Tattvam, and they have developed the Murti, form of the Murti, and particular form, particular shape, weapons, jewelries, their vehicle of transport, and their process of worship, all of these things has come like that. For example, you can see Vishnu's vehicle is Garuda, isn't it? Garuda is his vehicle. It is a tattvam. It's actually a tattvam. Now, that Garuda represents the discriminative power of the self and the non-self. Alma and Alma Vivekam. Representation of that is Garuda. Alma and Alma Vivekam, the representation of that is Garuda. Representation of that is Garuda. But when it comes to Puranam, and when it was to present it to us in the form of stories, we will say that Krishna jumped onto the Garuda and he came in the Garuda from the spiritual world all the way to meet Gajendra. He came on the Garuda. So there are so many stories in the Puranam you will find in that way. But this Garuda is a form that has been created from the Maya Tattvam to create the Saguna Brahman form of Vishnu. Vishnu is Nirgunam. But Vishnu, when he comes with the contact with the Maya Tattvam, it becomes Sagunam and possible to worship in that way. So, similarly you will see Lord Shiva's vehicle is a bull, is it not? Lord Shiva's vehicle is a bull. Now, normally what it is that Shiva has given, when you have reached that state of advanced state of spiritual life, Shiva will give the darshanam to the devotee sitting on top of a bull. That darshanam is possible. And how? Because in Sankalpam the rishis have created this, that a bull is a vehicle of Shiva. We go to so many temples, you'll see the bull outside for Shiva's temple. Or Garuda outside a Vishnu's temple, isn't it? So, in the first canto, you have seen that bull represents religious principles, isn't it? Dharma, represents religious principles. So, on the top of the bull, Shiva is traveling. So, particularly what it is indicating to us is, religious principles uphold the truth. Krishna. The truth is held by the religious principle. Shiva there represents the religious principles. Religious principles is upheld by the bull. And what are the symptoms of that? Four things are spoken in the Bhagavatam. Satyam, Shaujam, Daya, Tapasa. The four legs of that bull. Remember? In the first canto? Truthfulness, cleanliness, mercy, or compassion or mercy, and then austerity. These are the four legs of that bull. Now, when you read Bhagavatam first time, you will see that meeting between the bull and the cow. And Parikshit Maharaj was also there. So you start seeing that bull meet the cow standing there, and the bull is standing there. So you have to look at it, understand it in this way. That bull is a representative of the dharma. Dharma means satyam, shaujam, daya, and this tapasya. These are the four legs of that bull. It is spoken figuratively in that way. So, when these four different forms, when that manifests in somebody's intelligence completely, when these four things, when it manifests in somebody's heart 100%, there Krishna or the Absolute Truth will manifest. That is what that means. That bull is carrying the Shiva means that. Shiva means don't take by the form. Shiva means auspicious. Auspicious means the truth. We are addressing him different names. Vishnu, Shiva, Krishna. This, so many names we are addressing. But the truth is one. Vadandida tattvavidam tattvam yat jnanam advayam. Advaya jnanam it is. So, one who carries truthfulness, one who carries austerities, one who carries mercy, and one who carries austerity in the heart to 100% full, in full, he is carrying the Absolute Truth inside him. That is what that is indicating. But when you read the Puranam, what you will see? You will think that, oh, one leg was broken and another leg was smashed down. So we are imagining a bull standing there with two legs. And sometimes you see third leg is also gone. Only the fourth leg is present there. But these are all figurative way of saying these things to make it easier to comprehend. But otherwise, if everything is spoken in this subtle level, we won't find any interest in that, not understand that either. So principle behind that is that everything, like bull is Lord Shiva's vehicle, Garuda is Vishnu's vehicle, similarly peacock is Subramanya's vehicle, Kartikeya's vehicle is peacock, Ganesh has got the, rat as the vehicle. So when you see all these things, they think this Hinduism is a completely total confusing thing. Everybody gets totally driven away by that. They couldn't figure out what is it all about. Whereas it's much easier if you have one God somewhere and He is always saving you and helping you, getting out of all the troubles in this world. And eventually after everything is over, you are going back to Him and live there. Husband and wife here, husband and wife there also, and all together happy there, happy here also. This concept is much easier for the people to take it. Whereas if you say like this, Ganesh is travelling on a rat or a mouse, Subramanya is travelling on a peacock, and Shiva is on a bull, Vishnu is on a Garuda, people think that why don't they get a Mercedes or a Rolls Royce instead of getting all the, this is the way they will, naturally this is our mind, isn't it? What can you do? What can you do? So that is why it is important to know what is the thought behind it? Where is this all coming from? Rishis are not any way lacking in intelligence. They have certain reasons behind all these conceptions, behind these different vehicles, what they are using. Why Garuda was used, why bull was used, why rat was used, and why peacock was used, and so many other things. Similarly, if you look Sri Parvati's vehicle, you see, she'll see there that how she is present in this world. There is a reason behind that also. So if you look Devi Bhagavatam, you will see so many things spoken about her. So dharmam is, you have seen the first canto, represents that on the top of the bull, top of the bull he is traveling, Shiva is traveling, and dharmam is the one which carries the truth. Because he has got these four legs, satyam, shaujam, daya, tapasya. And these four bhavam, which means this satyam, shaujam, daya, tapasya, truthfulness, cleanliness, mercy, and austerity. When these four bhavam, because they are bhavam actually inside, isn't it? It's a emotions inside in a mind. When it manifests in someone's someone's heart fully, there Krishna will appear. The presence of Krishna is obviously there. So, in this way, through different tattvam, Krishna's form or Vishnu's form or Shiva's form and their jewelry And you will be surprised, people will ask this question also. Look at Lord Shiva, he's always got a snake around his neck. And people find that very difficult to understand, why there is a snake all around his neck. Similarly, his weapons is a trident. We have got much better weapon than that, we say, isn't it? With our latest ICBMs and or surface-to-air missiles and all that, he's more powerful than this trident. So it becomes very difficult for people to relate with these things. So that is why other religions have left all these things. They couldn't, due to their weakness only, they couldn't understand it properly. And they realized it that even though Jesus Christ was preaching about the truth, they started worshipping Jesus Christ more and made it easier for themselves. And when Jesus was saying about the Upanishad's truths, they misunderstood and started presenting him as the truth more than the Upanishad's truth. So you can see everywhere how we became weak, people have become weak, and philosophy has, in course of time, changed. And totally, when it became a personal thing in that way, everywhere it has become purely a matter to fight each other. Nothing more than that. It doesn't carry anything more than that. So in this way, the jewelry, Krishna has got this vanamala around forest flowers, garland of forest flowers. Krishna is wearing that. His clothes, vehicle. Similarly, all the associates, parshadas they are called. Parshada means associates. And in Tantrashastram, they explain all these things. And it is on this principle that how deity worship has begun. The origin of the deity worship has begun in this way. So you will see in the Bhagavatam, we will go to this chapter now, and where all worship is possible. I will come to the beginning later, but if you look into the verse, 12th verse, in this 27th chapter, Shaili Dharmai Lehi Dauhi Lepya Lekya Jasai Gadi Manomayi Manimayi Pratima Ashtavidha Smrida. Shaili Dharumayi Lauhi Lepya Lekya Jasai Gadi Manomayi Manimayi Pratima Ashtavidha Smrida. Where all you can worship. Deity worship is, what we are worshipping is one form only, out of these eight varieties. In eight different places, you can worship Krishna. You can worship in eight different places. Shaili, Dharumai, Lauhi, Lepya, Lekya cha Saigadi, Manomai, Manimai, Pratima, Ashtavidhau, Smrita. So, this worship, Krishna is saying here, that this is Krishna's words. Krishna is saying this to Uddhava. In all these places you can worship me. You can worship me. So, in all these eight different ways, when you worship, the method of worship is slightly different. Method of worship is slightly different. For example, you can have worship the deity in the wood, you can worship the deity in the metal, you can worship the deity in the stone. Most of the modern temples, they worship the deity in the stone. And some ancient temples, they have still the follow method of worshipping in the wood. Like Jagannath Swami is worshipped in the wood. And they have to make a new deity every 12 years or something. They bring a new wood, they carve the new deity, and they invoke all the worship they had done in the previous deity from the old deity. The whole potency is invoked and brought into the new deity, and the old deity is burned or it is destroyed and thrown into the sea, I think. That's what they do in Jagannath. So that's what important thing. That so it is not what material you have used for worship that is important. Instead, how much Chaitanyam is present in that deity due to the worship you have done. Due to the worship you have done. And as I mentioned before, that at one time this worship was all over the world, it existed in different forms. The Shaili Dharumai Lepi Lohi Lauhi Lepya Lekya Jasaikadi. All this worship existed in different forms throughout the world. But in due course of time, it got contracted and contracted, and finally it existed in only one part of this world. In the Bharatavarsham it existed for later. So otherwise in other places also it existed. Now sometimes we think, due to our own jnanam or avidya inside, that I am living in the UK, what should I do in the UK? You may ask the question. When Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita or Srimad Bhagavatam, there was no UK. There was no Europe either. These are all our creation. Just because we are in the UK doesn't mean Krishna's laws has to change to suit the UK. It doesn't change. That's our ajnanam inside. We have to know this, first of all, that Vedic dharma, Vaidika dharma, Vedic philosophy is addressed to the human society. It is up to them what they want to do. If you make the boundary fall in this France, Germany, UK, this and that, that's your problem. That's not Krishna's problem. Krishna will only tell you what is the process. And Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam is for the whole world. It's not for you or me or some people who believe in it. No, it's addressed to the whole world. There is nowhere any reference either in the Bhagavatam or in the Bhagavad Gita about Krishna's position as the absolute truth. Without not compromising that, there is no reference anywhere. Krishna is accepted as the absolute truth. Because why? Krishna spoke everything from the platform of the absolute truth. Therefore he is the absolute truth. But the absolute truth, what the rishis have spoken before, a personality has come and presented that to the world in the form of Bhagavad Gita and instructed Uddhava in the form of Ekadasha Skandam and lived a life in this world and showed it to us that whatever he has spoken is the truth by his own life. And therefore Krishna is worshipable. But if you have to take it like, otherwise if you start thinking, oh, Krishna is born in India, therefore he is an Indian god. Jesus was born in Bethlehem, therefore he is an Israeli god. Muhammad was born in, prophet was born in, where is it, in Mecca or Medina, where it is. So he belongs to the Lord God of the Arabs. If you start doing like this, it won't make any sense. It won't make any sense. You have to see things from the spiritual platform, everything. They didn't write these rules for the UK, these rules for the Europe, these rules for the Americans, like that. That is up to you, how you want to understand it. If you want to understand it, if you accept Krishna's authority, then you have to follow what Krishna has told us to do, and you have to do it wherever it is possible to do it, in whichever way it is possible to do it. That you have to look for that opportunity and do it. Anything, any instruction what Krishna has given is like that. It's not limited to a country or to a place, anywhere. So, here you can, this varieties of worship, what Krishna is going to talk about it in this chapter, there is many things has to be taken into account. For example, that upasana means that this worship, deity worship, vigraha upasana it is called, vigraha upasana, worshipping a form, is possible in these eight different ways. Krishna has said that. In these eight different ways. And there again, chalam, achalam. Two different ways. Chalam means movable. Achalam means non-movable. Achalam means non-movable. So, chale chala chale di dvivida pradishta jiva mandiram. The next verse after that. Udvasam avahane nasta sthirayam uddhava archane. Krishna is saying there that chalam, achalam, the two different ways this worship is possible. Which one? External worship. Is possible moving and non-moving. Moving means, for example, you are carrying the deity with you all over wherever you go, and wherever you are staying, you install the deity there and you worship there. And big temples, that's achalam. You don't move the deity from there. In the big temples, there will be a main deity who will not move from the where he is installed. There is achalam. But then there will be other deity which is for the sake of festivals to take around or for moving around. There will be another form of the same deity in a smaller way who will be taken around everywhere else. He is called chalam. One cannot be moved is called achalam. The one that can be moved is chalam. So, when the deity is chalam. Chalam means mobile, like mobile phone. When the deity is mobile, Krishna is saying there are two things necessary. Avahanam, Udvasanam. That means whenever you bring the deity to a new place, you have to bring Krishna's presence into that deity from your own heart. This is the place where he is permanently present. Yeah. So from here, you have to invoke him and bring him into the deity at the time of worship. Once the worship is over, then you have to bring him back from there and pull him back into the place where he came from. This is called avahanam and udvasanam. And this is particularly necessary when the deity is moving. When the deity is moving. But if the deity is installed in one place in the temple, at the time of the installations, you take the power from inside. Again, the person who is installing the deity, where does he bring Krishna into the deity? Deity, a few days ago, it was only a stone. Somebody has carved a form in that. And we have put it there and says, this is Krishna. But Krishna is not present there due to that. Krishna has come there because the person who has installed that deity, he brings Krishna from inside. And bring Krishna inside and ask him, request him to stay in that deity form. And because the deity worship is permanent in a temple, you don't have to bring him back from there. He will remain in that deity forever. That is the principle. So, normally, for those deities which are on the move, like some sannyasis, gurus, they all carry the deity, isn't it, with them to different places, they worship. Strictly, in accordance with the Shastram, every time you have to bring avahanam of Krishna from the heart into the deity. There are mantras associated with that. And similarly, after the worship is over, you have to bring him back and put him back into the place where he came from, which is called Udvasanam. So, avahanam and Udvasanam, both are necessary if the deity is moving. If the deity is moving. If the deity is not moving, if the deity is installed in the temple permanently, where regular worship is going on, in that situation, only the first time when the deity was installed, the acharya or the great personality who installed the deity, he would have invoked the presence of Krishna into the deity from the heart, from Antaryami. This is all Chaitanyam, isn't it? It's all Chaitanyam. Chaitanyam means living force it is. The spirit, that's what is moving. What are you invoking? You are invoking that spirit inside. Krishna is invoked from Antaryami and requested him to stay in that form. And the acharya who has installed the deity, he would pray to Krishna to remain in that form for the benefit of the people who are worshipping him. So this is how permanent situation happens. So you can see this, all the big temples, worship has happened in that way. Worship has happened in that way. So then there is processes like manomayi, worshipping Krishna in the mind. Manasa puja. There is a whole process for that. How to, everything in the mind, collecting the ingredients, offering the worship, but requires good strength of mind and good concentration as well for doing that. So that is manomayi, worshipping in the mind. So and then this deity worship process, in due course of time, great authorities appeared in the deity worship process, and they have written various literature in reference to deity worship. Like in the Gaudiya Vaishnava tradition, Rupa Goswami and Gopala Bhatta Goswami, they have jointly combined that book, what we call today as the Hari Bhakti Vilas, isn't it? Those books were written by in this. Similarly, there are other books, so many books available, Sharada Tilakam, Ramanujacharya's traditions, there are so many different books. Like this, many literature has come about later on about deity worship, according to the process they have followed. Apart from this, the worshipping process of Vishnu is what is known as Pancharatram. Pancharatriya Vidhi, it is called. Pancharatriya process, Pancharatriya Vidhi, is the process of all the Vishnu forms are worshipped in that way. That means Vishnu, Krishna, Narasimham, Vamanam and Varaham, all the Vishnu incarnations, they are all worshipped through the Panjaratriya Vidhi process. Panjaratriya Vidhi process. There is also another Vaishnava process which is called Vaikhasanam. This Vaikhasanam process is used in Tirupati, for example. That's also a Vaishnava process. Vaishnava process which is different from Pancharatram. Pancharatra Vidhi was from Narada Maharshi, Vaikhasanam from some other sage, and that is the process Tirupati follows in their worship. Then Shiva temples, they have what is called Pashupadam. Pashupadam process is what? The Pashupadam is another process of deity worship, for worship of Lord Shiva. Because what you have to remember is, these worshipable processes, different processes like Pancharatram, Vaikhasanam, Pashupadam, they are all coming from the Vedic literature, supplementary Vedic literature. And when they were compiled, there is a influence of the modes into it. Sattvagunam, Rajogunam, Tamogunam will be there. That is why in the process of worship you will see the differences. Like Sri Parvati is worshipped in another form, isn't it? Devi worship is worshipped in another form. Shaktayam it's called. Shakti worship. Shaktayam. So Shaktayam exists, Shaivam exists, Vaishnavam exists. These are the three main ones. Shaktayam, Shaivam, Vaishnavam. Vaishnavam for Vishnu's worship, Shaktayam for Shakti or Sri Parvati's worship, and Shaivam for Shiva's worship. So for all these different traditions in their deity worship, different literature has come about that process explaining that, and that is what is followed in the big, big temples in the world. So so here, let us go back into the beginning. Uddhava vacham kriya yogam samachakshva veda bhavadaradhanam prabho yastu atvam ye yadharchanti satvada satvadar shabham. Uddhava vacha kriya yogam samachakshva bhavadaradhanam prabho yasma atvam ye yadharchanti satvada satvadar shabham. Uddhava is saying to Krishna that devotees worship you through this process, Kriya Yogam, and that process of worship kindly explain to me, says Uddhava to Krishna. Uddhava says to Krishna. And Uddhava says to Krishna, there is a specific reason why he is asking. He is saying that. In the next four verses, you will see that why Uddhava is asking that to Uddhava is asking that from Krishna. Something more. This Kriya Yogam, when we say Kriya Yogam, what exactly the thought behind it? Thought is this, that what is separating us from Krishna? What is separating us from Krishna? According to Shastram, it is this world that is separating us from Krishna. Because of the presence of the world, our attention is not going towards Krishna. If the world is not there, we will be conscious about Krishna's presence inside. So this is called Bhuta Bhaudika Prabancham, isn't it? Bhutam Bhaudika Prabancham, it is called. So, and this Bhuta Bhaudika Prabancham, this creation, is in three different forms. Stulam, Sushmam, Karanam. Stulam, Sushmam, Karanam. And Stulam is our vacant state, where you are more conscious of this world than any other time. Therefore it is Stulam. Gross. Gross. We are most gross in the vacant state. So in the vacant state, this world is present in the Stulam, gross form. In the dream state, it is present in the subtle form, Sushmam. So, Sushmam in the Swapna stage, in the dream state. And similarly, deep sleep state, Sushupti state, this world is present in the form of Karanam, Karanagaram. So, sthulakaram, sushmakaram, karanakaram. In these three forms, it is present in the waking state, dream state, and in the deep sleep state. So, and continuously, we are experiencing these three states, one after the other. We have jagrat, waking state, then the dream state, and the deep sleep. Jagrat sapnam sushupti, jagrat sapnam sushupti. Continuously, and in all these three states, what you are experiencing is this bhuta-bhautika prapancham. So, practically you can see, what is separating you and the truth is this world. If that much if you understand, you got it. What separates us from Krishna is this world. You see? Bhuta-bhautika prapancham. Because of the presence of this world in front of us, in all the three states when we are existing, we are absorbed in that. Whether in the waking state, or in the dream state, or in the deep sleep state. So therefore, it is from these bhuta-bhautika prapancham, where did this come from? This came from Krishna. This also come from Krishna. And offering everything from this bhuta-bhautika prapancham back to that person from whom it has come, that is our worship process. Jalam, gandham, pushpam, dupam, divam. The panchabhautiyam. They represent the five material elements, which we have mentioned before. Water, jalam, gandham, smell, jalam, gandham, pushpam, dupam, divam. They all represent the five elements in a subtle form, and with those elements, we are worshipping the same person, Supreme Truth, from whom all this world has come. That is all it is. And this Kriya Yogam is that process, using the material elements and using them with care and attention and with all the respects and reverence, offering that to the Supreme Person is what is known as Kriya Yogam. Now Kriya Yogam is clear. The definition of Kriya Yogam is like that. And that is why you have to see it all through the deep level from the Shastram. Otherwise it won't make any sense. We'll start misunderstanding things. People ask this question. You ask so many people, what is this arati about? You are bringing water, flower, incense and everything in the plate. You are doing 3 times, 5 times, 7 times, whatever it is. What is it all about? Unless you understand the underlying principle behind it, this arati won't make any sense to you. Just like 2 days ago, do this means, on Sunday, there was a Rath Yatra in Los Angeles. Temple had their Rath Yatra there. And it is a big Rath Yatra there, a lot of people come. So the devotee who was responsible for a lot of these actions, or a lot of this organizing this festival, he was saying in the class that people are coming and asking, what are you doing with this so many times in front of Lord Jagannath was offered the arati. Now for an outsider, he doesn't know anything. He has come and he is seeing this. So when he is seeing this, he is seeing that you are arranging this arati plate with incense, flowers, and the Jagannath deity is there. And you are making these offerings so many times, whatever you have trained accordingly. So people are asking this question to them, to the devotees, what does it all mean? Can you explain that to us? So they were saying this. I'm just saying that will naturally come, this question will come from the, if you are preaching to people in that level, in that stage. So if you do like that, what is the benefit? That means this creation which is blocking us for us to realize Krishna. The world is blocking our realization of Krishna. So what we are doing is, this world which has come from Krishna, its summary form is these five material elements. And that, we are through them, we are making the offering to Krishna. And if you do that, your mind will get purified. You will get purified inside. Why? Mind is, important thing is, the mind should get purified. Why? The whole world is inside the mind. Where else is the mind? Where else is the world? Where is this whole world? It is in my mind. Is it not? It's not in my head. It's in my mind. It's not in my leg. Not in my hands. It's in my mind. So when you say, how am I connected with the world? In this way. The world is present inside my mind. So the rishis have found that it is the only way that those who haven't got that fineness in them, what they have spoken about in the other processes, For them, this may be another way of placing Krishna. By offering what Krishna has given to us, using that as a medium and offer that to Krishna and please Krishna in that way, which will purify our mind. And in that way, what will happen to the mind? Mind will turn its vision inward. It will start inward looking. So deity worship eventually ends up in that. If you do the deity worship properly and with proper understanding and do things properly, and if it is done well, then that person will become very inward looking, nature will build up in him. So what will happen? The Bhudabhaudiya Prapancham, the external world, it will dissolve itself in all the three states. So it will leave these three states, Jagrat, Swapnam, Sushupti, and it will go inwards towards the Swarupam, it one's own identity, and that is called Kriya Yoga. In another way to explain that, where this Kriya Yoga's underlying principle, they are more important. Kriya Yoga, as I mentioned before, it is not possible to speak about Kriya Yoga on a practical level. That is something one has to learn from the people who have done it well, and through them directly you have to get trained from them. That's the only way you can have practice Kriya Yoga properly. Otherwise you won't understand that. You can't run a course and seminar on the Kriya Yoga, and that will not work. Because there they'll tell you that so many things that you can have if you read this chapter also, you will understand what Kriya Yoga Krishna is. But this cannot be practically done unless you have someone who come in that tradition, shows you how to do it, and work trained by him directly. Only then it will be effective in the person. Because all the subtleties of the Kriya Yoga cannot be explained through words. That if you have to practice it with him together. There's a lot of subtleties involved in there. So that is the important principle. So we'll continue that after a few minutes. Chedo darpanam arjanam vamaha davagni nirvapanam shrayakaidava chandriya vidaranam vidyavadhu jivanam ஆனந்தம் பரிவர்த்தனம் பிரதிபத பூர்ணாமிரதாஸ்வாதனம் சர்வாத்மாஸ்வனம் பரம் விஜயதே ஸ்ரீகிருஷ்ண சங்கீர்த்தனம் நாம்நாமகாரி பகுதா நிஜ சர்வசக்தி தத்ரார்ப்பிதா நியமிதா ஸ்மரணேன காலா ஏதாதிருஷீ தவ கிருபா பகவன் மமாபி துர்தைவமீதசமிஹாஜனிதானுராதாஹ த்ருணாரபிஷுனீசேன தரோரபி சகிஷ்ணுனா அமானினாமானதேனா கிருதனீய சதா ஹரி நதனம் நஜனம் நசுந்தரீம் கவிதாம் வா ஜகதீஷ காமயே மம ஜன்மனி ஜன்மனீஸ்வரி பவதாத் பக்திரஹை துகித்வை ஐ நந்ததனுஜ கிங்கரம் பதிதாமாம்ஷமே பவாம்புதோ கிருபையா தவ பாத பங்கஜ ஸ்தித தோழி சதிருஷம் விசிந்தயாம் நயனம் கலத சுதாரயாம் வதனம் கத்கத ருத்தயாங்கிராம் புலகைர் நிசிதம் கதா வபோ தவம் நாம கிரஹணே பவிஷ்யதி யுகாயுதம் நிமேஷேணாம் சக்ஷுஷா பிராவிஷாயுதம் சூன்யாயுதம் ஜகல் சர்வம் கோவிந்த விரஹே நமே ஆஷ்லேஷ்ய வா பாதரதாம் பினஷ்டு மாம் அதர்ஷனாம் மர்மஹதாம் கரோது வா யதா ததா வா விததா துலம்படோ மல்ப்ராணநாதாஸ்து நயேவ நாபரா. So, everywhere, wherever we were talking about the deity worship, that wherever Tantriya Vidhi is performed, the Tantrams are there behind it. That means Vaishnava Tantram, Shaiva Tantram, Shaktaya Tantram. There is Tantriya Vidhi, worship of the particular form. So, in there, it will talk about how to build the temple, Nirmana Vidhi, Kshetra Nirmana Vidhi. Then, how to carve the deity. There is to be a proportion to all the bodily features. You can't have Krishna very fat or Krishna very thin either. There is a way of the Shastram that the people who are carving the deities, they know, calculations behind it. Then how to install the deity. All these things you will find in the Tantram, Tantriya Vidhi. Vishnu's Tantriyam is Vaishnavam, which is Pancharatriya Vidhi. And there, how to worship Vishnu, how to worship Krishna, how to worship Narasimham, how to worship Ramachandra, Sita Devi, all this is separately spoken. All the mantras associated with their worship, all this is strictly given in a proper way, so that those deities installed will be worshipped in that form. So they are called Agamam. These are Agamam, Nigamam. Agamam is these deity worship, Shastram. It's called Agamam. Pancharatram is the Vaishnava Agamam. And similarly, Pashupadam is the Shaiva Agamam. Shaiva Agamam is Pashupadam. For example, like Lord Shiva, Vishnu is worshipped in different forms. Some places as Vishnu, Mahavishnu is worshipped. Some places is worshipped as Vamanamurti. Some places as Narasimham. Some places is worshipped as Ramachandra. All are Vishnu. Vishnu's different variations. And similarly, Lord Shiva is worshipped in a similar way, in different forms. Akhora form, Vamadeva form, Ishana form, Sadyojada. These are all different forms of Shiva worshipped in the famous Shiva temple. Dakshinamurti, another form of Shiva. So that is decided by the great Acharya who have installed that deity. He invokes that particular form to come and manifest in that deity. So what will happen is, when he installs the deity, he would have actually written the Dhyana Shlokam for meditation of that particular form. And also the rules and regulations of worshipping that deity. And everything will be handed over to the persons who are worshipping the deity. They will be instructed on that, on these things. So form may be same, but the mode of worship can be different. For example, the deity may look like Vishnu form, but the worship will be Narasimham, Narasimhamurti. Similarly, deity may look like Vishnu form, but worship may be Krishna's worship. So that you have to know, that only the people who are worshipping the deity in the temple will know that, the science behind it. So Shiva has different variations in the same way. Same lingam, Shiva is always worshipped in the lingam form. Lingam form, but again the worship is Dakshinamurti or Akhora form, Vamadeva form, Ishana form, Sadyojada form, whatever that the installed personality has worshipped that form. Similarly, Devi form. If you take Sri Parvati's form, Vaishnavi, Kali, and Ishani, Narayani, Ambiga, Sharada, Chandiga, they are all different forms of Sri Parvati. Maya's different forms. So deity may appear a female form, that's all. But what defines that deity as Narayani, Ishani, Ambiga, Parvati, or names are mentioned in the Bhagavatam, isn't it? Eight different forms in the third chapter, 10th canto. Yeah, the worshipable, different forms is worship, that depends on the mantra, what is used for the worship of the deity. The mantra decides that. So mantra is more important than the external form what you see. The form what you see is a form. It's a female form carved in the stone. And for example, if you are worshipping Radharani, Sita Devi, or Sri Parvati, Lakshmi, Saraswati, they all look the same, isn't it? Female form, dressed in the saris and dressed in the jewellery and everything. Looking at the deity, you can't say this is Radharani and this is Sita Devi. That may go wrong sometimes. In one place, Sita Devi may appear in another place like Radharani. Because deity is a deity. But then how do you know which is the form worshipped? By the mantra. Mantra decides what's the form. Not what you see with your eyes. That's not the form. So Sita Devi's form, because these forms, what then they carve the deity, they will have certain ways of carving this deity based on certain dimensions they will worship in that way. and their sizes and all the features of the body, everything is driven. But ordinary people who come to the temple, when they see the deity form, they can ask this question, is it Radharani or is it Sita Devi? Or is it Shri Parvati? Or is it Lakshmi Devi? So how is decided? It's decided only that Pujari knows what mantra he is worshipping. So mantram is more important than the form that you are worshipping. What mantram defines the deity clearly. All the attributes of the deity will come, and that is why it's called Mula Mantram. Mula Mantram. The Adhisthanam or basic mantram with which the deity is worshipped. So Shakteya Agamam, that is a Shakti's Agamam, they will talk about these different forms of Devi. Different forms of Devi. Like Sri Parvati, she is worshipped as Annapurneshwari in Benares. Annapurneshwari. She giving bhiksha to the Brahmachari. That's a form there. In Mathura, she is worshipped as Meenakshi. In Kanjipuram, she is worshipped as Kamakshi. In Vaishnava Devi, she is worshipped as Vaishnavi. Is it not? So, wherever you go, in Bengal, she is worshipped in many places as Kali or Durga. It is her manifestation. So, therefore, the mantram that is used in all these places will be different. Will be different also. So, both Vaidigam and Tantrigam, they are both uses mantram for their worship, for their, or Mishram, mixed both, Vaidigam and Tantrigam. And, as I mentioned, Salagramam as a different, Salagramam is different. In Salagramam, although it is moving, you don't have to bring Krishna into it from the heart, or take it back from the Salagram. In Salagram, there is Krishna always present. Vishnu is always present in the Salagram. So that rule doesn't apply to Salagram. Like other deities, you have to invoke the deity Vishnu from Krishna from inside, and then after the worship is over, you have to bring him back. That is not applicable to Salagram. Salagram, Vishnu is always present. He is always present there. Similarly, there is one lingam called Banalingam. Lord Shiva. Shivalingam also, there are varieties in the Shivalingam. Banalingam doesn't require, Banasura worshipped Shiva with that. There it doesn't require this invoking and bringing back from the deity. So that's what Krishna is saying here. Then, deity, as I mentioned before, this puja or deity worship process, one should learn from a person who is well trained and who has lived as a proper pujari for the whole life. As he does this deity worship for a long period of time, because of his worship, Krishna manifests within him to a large degree. And one, therefore, because it is like that, it is not a topic for a lecture in that sense. And it is no point in talking about it also, because you will only theoretically understand that. Theoretically understanding it doesn't help, deity worship. It should come into practice and should be a benefit to somebody. So therefore, it is always said that deity worship is always by living with someone, a first-class pujari who is doing the deity worship properly every day, throughout life. And if he has done it properly with the right way, 10, 15 years, naturally he will have that purity within him. Purity within him. If you look in the 29th chapter, you will see a verse there. Krishna saying, 19th verse, 11, 29, 19. After saying a lot of things, Krishna is saying, I am He, Sarva Kalpanam Sadri Jino Mato Mama Malbhava Sarva Bhudeshu Manova Kaya Vruttivim. seeing Krishna's presence in every living entity. I am He, Sarvagalpanam Sadrijino Madho Mama, Malbhavam Sarvabhudeshu, Mano Vak Kaya Vrithibi. From the mind, words, body, and by actions. By all these things, by all these different mediums, mind, words, body, and the actions the body performs. Through all these ways, accepting and recognizing Krishna's presence in every living entity is the highest worship. Krishna says, he's saying that, I am He Sarvagalpanam Sadrijino Matho Mama Malbhava Sarvabhudeshu Mano Vak Kaya Vrithibhi. So, if this is there, this is even higher than the deity worship. If we, the purpose of deity worship is to reach this stage, has to come. Otherwise, sitting down in front of a deity for the whole life and doing the worship, and if you only see that there is only Krishna here in this deity, nowhere else, my Gopal, my Krishna, and thinking that this is all it is, then that is ajnanam. That Krishna has mentioned. Who says that? Hari Maharshi says that. Isn't it? That, yeah. The 11th canto he mentions there, Ishare tad adineshu balisheshu dishal srijam. The three types of devotees. There he has mentioned there, Archayam eva haraye. Only worshipping the deity as spiritual life, then you have lost it. If you think that worshipping the deity at home or the temple is the only spiritual life, without knowing this higher principle, then your deity worship also will not go very further. It is stuck there. The purpose of all the deity worship is to come to this understanding, what Krishna is saying like that, there. So basically the highest worship is seeing the whole creation as a manifestation of Krishna, all living beings in this world, and serving them in that way. So that is the greatest Bhagavata Dharma, what Krishna is talking about. Kayena vaja manasendriyarva buddhyalpava prakrute subhaval karomi yadir sagalam parasmai narayanayadi samarpayami. So there, that is why in the Bhagavatam also, that looking this whole creation and all the living entities in this world, seeing them as Krishna's manifestation and serving them, and therefore three things they have given important. That bhakti towards Krishna, bhakti towards Krishna, and association with Krishna's devotees, association with Krishna's devotees, and respecting them as they are Krishna's people. They are Krishna's people. And respect towards them. Greatest respect towards Krishna's devotees. Because they belong to Krishna. They are Krishna's people. And ordinary jivas who are in distressed conditions, poor people or all other living entities who are suffering in this world, mercy towards them. This is what is the spoken. Love towards tul prema tulga maitri jadam adishukriba dilsubhuyad ubecha. In the Ekadashi Skandam you will see this. Tul premam, love towards Krishna. Tulka maitri, towards Krishna's people, friendship. Krishna's people, friendship. Krishna's devotees, one who is chanting Hare Krishna, one who is serving Krishna honestly and living a life of honesty in life. So to them, friendship always. Tul premam tulga maitri. Jadam adishu kripa. Those who are not interested in spiritual life, dull and feeling that there is no need for spiritual life, but they are not inimical. To such people, jadam adishu kripa. And those who are inimical, and those who are always creating troubles and only trying to give trouble for you, dilsu bhuyad ubeksha, indifference to them. Dilsu. Dilsu means envious. They are envious. And those who are envious in that way, ubeksha, you move away from them. So, archayam vasam archam kudugamurudaram shraddhaya vardhadam me tulsam sevi tadavi bhagavatam alabhado. Then achayam va samarcham kudugamuridare shraddhaya vardhadame. That our shraddha in the archana, archana means deity worship, archavadaram he is called. Increase that shraddha in the archayam va samarcham kudugam uridaram shraddhayo vardhadame tulsam sevi tadabi drudam upalabhade bhakta logottamatvam. That it will develop in a person if he does this deity worship properly based on the shastram. But you have to always remember, while doing this deity worship, your living in this world should be based on dharmam. If there is no dharmam in life, saying that I am doing deity worship, it's bogus. It won't help. The lifestyle should be based on dharmam. That means you can't do things the way you like it because it suits me. That's not good. That's against the principle. So if there is no dharmam in life, if you live in a dharmic way, you maintain your life in this world, and then you say you are doing deity worship, it has no benefit. It has no benefit. That Krishna will look after in his own way. He knows how to handle that. But we can't do anything about it. But these underlying principles are valid all times. That's the first thing to remember. So, Krishna is saying, first verse itself, that Kriya Yogam by which they have worshipping you, they are asking Krishna, Uddhava asked Krishna, how do they do that? So, the four verses, specifically, why Uddhava has asked that question. Edadvadandi munayo muhur nishreya sandranam Narado Bhagavan Vyasa Acharya Angirasa Sudaha. Edadvadandi munayo muhur nishreya sandranam Narado Bhagavan Vyasa Acharya Angirasa Sudaha. That Sri Narada Maharshi has authorized deity worship. And Vedavyasa Maharshi has also written books about deity worship. Brihaspati has authorized deity worship. All these great personalities, they are saying that deity worship is a process suitable for this age and devotees should take to it seriously. They are saying like that. It is auspicious for the human species. And it's what he's saying here. And because they have all written different books about the Kriya Yoga, about Kriya Yoga. Nisradam me mukhambojam yadaha bhagavan ajam putrebhyo brigumukhebhyo devyaicha bhagavan bhavaham. Nisradam me mukhambojam yadaha bhagavan ajam putrebhyo brigumukhebhyo devyaicha bhagavan bhavaham. That whatever that has come from Krishna, that has been, in due course of time, that karma, tandriya karma yogam, or tandriya vidhi, in due course of time, Brahma has instructed that to Bhrigu Maharshi and many others. And Lord Shiva has instructed that Bhagavan Bhava, that he has instructed to Devi, to Sri Parvati, the same deity worship process. Uddhava is saying that it is such an authorized thing, this deity worship, from all these great sages. You see, our shastram is based on the rishis. Rishis are our authority. Rishis are our authority. That's why you can see, even Uddhava is saying, Sri Narada Maharshi, Vedavyas, Angiras, all of them are our authorities. They are the personalities who have given us the shastram. Even the deity worship shastram, they have given us. So, Uddhava says here, that this shastram, deity worship, or Kriya Yogam, has been instructed by Brahma to Bhrigu Maharshi and others. Similarly, Lord Shiva has instructed about that to Sri Parvati. And then I would like to hear about the same topic from you, from Krishna. That is the request from Uddhava. Uddhava wants to hear about deity worship from Krishna. And Uddhava says to Krishna, that deity worship has been spoken before also. Uddhava is aware of that. And I would like to hear that from you, from Krishna. That is how this question came up. And that is why the fourth verse he says, Etat kamaravatraksham karmabandha vimochanam bhaktaya chanurektaya bruhi visheshwareshwara. Etat kamaravatraksham karmabandha vimochanam bhaktaya chanurektaya bruhi visheshwareshwara. Then addressing Krishna, visheshwareshwara, Lord of the universe, Lord of all creation, he says, this deity worship, Kriya Yogam, it cuts off our karma bandham, the bondage due to karma, what has been created. And kindly instruct me, I am your servant of your servant. Karma bandham vimochanam, that is, the deity worship is capable of doing that. Bhaktaya chanuraktaya bruhi visheshwareshwara. He says that instruct me this kriya yogam which cuts off karma bandhanam, karma vasana inside us, and purifies a person. But instruct me from you, I would like to hear. So basically Uddhava is saying that this process is suitable for everybody in all varnam, Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya and Shudra. And women and Shudras, or those who are even not authorized to study Shastram, even for them, in Kriya Yogam there is provision to worship Krishna. And they have been authorized to do that. They are given the permission to do so by the Rishis. Rishis has not given permission to everybody to study all the Shastram. Rishis has said there, those who have the highest purity inside, if they study Upanishads, they will get the benefit from that. Or for different levels, different Puranams were compiled, Upanishads were compiled, Mahabharatam was compiled, Ramayanam was compiled, looking at the different people who to whom it will benefit. That's how they were compiled. But Rishis also mentioned that this Kriya Yogam process is beneficial to everybody, Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya and Shudra. Women, everybody can use them, and they all have the right to worship Krishna through bhakti and through shraddha. So everyone can engage in Kriya Yogam. So they have found out that whoever does that, the auspiciousness that comes from that will come to them. So therefore I would like to hear this Kriya Yogam, says Uddhava. And in order to have shreyas, auspiciousness, Kriya Yogam, he says here, I have heard that Kriya Yogam is the most easy thing to execute. So shreyas, prayas, which we know what it means, isn't it? Shreyas and prayas. Shreyas is material, baudhigam, our happiness in this world. Prayas is almiyam. Almiyam. Almiyam means it is our spiritual benefit, what you get from that. So, so both shreyas and prayas is expected from this Kriya Yogam. Kriya Yogam. For example, if a person has desires, it can get fulfilled with the Kriya Yogam, deity worship. It can also help him to advance on the spiritual path. But only those who have developed proper spiritual understanding will not look for happiness in this world. That's a spiritually advanced state. But otherwise, this deity worship is capable of providing both shreyas as well as prayas in this world. So out of all the auspiciousness in this world, many things we do for our spiritual benefit. In spiritual life, we do everything for our spiritual benefit. And of all the many different sadhanas we perform, one of the best sadhana is this Kriya Yoga, says Uddhava. One of the best sadhana among the processes is this Kriya Yoga. He says to him that Edat Kamala Vatraksha. In the last words you can see that Edadvai Savavarnanam Ashramanamja Sammadam. Fourth words. Shreyasam Uttamam Manye Sri Shudranam Cha Manada. Sri Shudranam Cha Manata. That women Shudras, they all of them can be benefited by, and all the ashramis also, Brahmana Kshatriya Vaishya, they all get benefited by this Kriya Yoga process. Then Sri Bhagavan Uvacham, that addressing there, he says, in the last verse he said, Visheshwara, Visheshwara, Visheshwareshwara, Uddhava calls Krishna. Visheshwareshwara means, Vishwa means creation. The Ishwara of this creation is Lord Brahma, who created this. And there are so many Brahmas like that. And they are Ishwara of all those Brahmas. That is Visheshwareshwara. And Karma Bandha Vimochanam. That means we live in this world, and due to our presence here, we are experiencing the distress of this world. Distress of this world. And because we are suffering due to the being present here in this world, the distress comes to us in the form of birth and death. That's our distress. And therefore, because birth and death happening, we are basically very, very crude people, isn't it? Subjected to birth and death. That means not very spiritually elevated. Because of the cycle of birth and death, what we are experiencing, leaving one body, accepting another body, leaving that body, accepting another body. So, the Kriya Yogam, Uddhava says here, Bhaktaya Chanuraktaya Bruhi Visheshwareshwara. We are your devotees, Uddhava says. And there are others also who are attached to you. Bhaktaya Chanuraktaya. But at the same time, we are your servants. We are your servants. Bhaktaya Chanuraktaya. So please instruct me on this Kriya Yogam. Uddhava is requesting in a very humble way to Krishna to talk about that. Shri Bhagavan Uvacham Nahyo Anandabharasya Karmagandasya Chodhava Samkshimtam Varnayishyami Yadavadanuburvasham. Nahyo nahyon nahyando ananda bharasya karma gandasya chodhava samkshiptam varnayishyami yada vadane purvasham. Uddhava, he says, this karma yogam, kriya yogam is a karma yogam, but kriya yogam is a karma yogam. Karma yogam's aspect, that is. And in the form of this deity worship, what I am doing, what he is talking about is here. He says, it's a huge topic. It is a huge topic and there is no end to it. Krishna says this. Krishna says, there is no end to this process called Kriya Yogam. And Anipurvasha Yathavad Samkshiptam Varnayishyami. Therefore, I will give everything to you in a nutshell. I will explain these things in a nutshell to you, says Krishna to Uddhava. Because it is such a huge topic, broad subject, karmagandam it is. Actually it is karmagandam. And I'll say in a very condensed form or very essence, I will give it to you, he said. Seventh verse. Vaidigam tandriyam misham idimetri vidho makha trayanam ipside neiva vidhinamam samarchayel. Vaidigam tandriyo mishra idime trivitho makha trayanam ipside neiva vidhinamam samarchayen. Vaidigam tandriyam mishram. In this way, three kinds of puja, three kinds of worship. And out of these three, whichever one you like it, you can do it. You are given the freedom. If you like the Vaidika process, you can do the Vaidika process. If you like the Tandriya process, you have got the opportunity to do that, and you like that process, you follow the Tandriya Vidhi. And If it is mishram, that is also acceptable. But you should not think if you are doing the tantriyam process, oh, this is not Vedic, so I don't know whether it is the right thing. You shouldn't think like that. That's what Krishna is saying here. That if you have bhakti and shraddha, these are the two important aspects of Kriya Yoga. Bhakti and shraddha, if it is there, whether it is tantriyam or vaidigam or mishram, it doesn't matter. But if there is no bhakti or shraddha, whether it's vaidigam, tantriyam or mishram, it's all the same. It's all the same. So basically you can see in this worship, in the deity worship, the shraddha in bhakti is more important than the karmam itself. It's not the karmam that makes it a success. It's the bhavam behind it. Bhavagrahi Janardana says in the Purana. So now there are mantram, vaidikam. Let's look at the mantram, vaidikam mantram. Om Namo Narayanaya, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. These are all the Vaidika mantrams, isn't it? Comes on the mantram. And these are the mantrams used for Vishnu's worship or what for different incarnations also. Valsyam Kurmam Varaham Narsimham Vamanam, various Balaram, Sri Ram, all the different incarnations of Vishnu. They are all different incarnations of Vishnu. For their worship, one of these could be used as a Mula Mantra. Mula Mantra. So here we are talking about the Vaishnava Sampradayam, Vaishnava Puja Sampradayam. And when they say that you have to chant the Mula Mantra, you will chant one of these two mantras. Om Namo Narayanaya or Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So initially, the person, before you start your deity worship, before you get trained, the person who is training you, he will tell you, this mantra so many times a day for so many years you have to chant. So many years you have to chant. And and Vaidika Tandriga Misha Idime Trivitha Maha. So out of these three processes, Vaidikam, Tantrikam, Mishram, whichever process you like, you can adopt. But whatever it may be, you may have the question then, I allow to go for the Vaidika system, I do not know any mantram, how to chant. It's not like that. Mantram, Tantram, you may not know anything. But suppose you know how to offer to the deity, Samarpana Mantram. And if you know that, you can make the offerings to the deity. Or with all the mantram and tantram, what is combined? Mantram and tantram. There's a lot of things, technical things. You have to buy, if you want to know this very well, the technicalities of it, there are books associated with that, deity worship. What Prabhupada gave to the movement is a very simple form of worship. But later on, some devotees have developed in their own way, looking into the books, going to other Gaudiya Math temples, what they are doing, and started bringing things from other places, and incorporating that also into the process what Prabhupada started, first thing. So changes have happened in that way. So mantram and tantram, whatever you know to what capacity you can start with, but important things is bhakti. One thing is bhakti inside. Bhakti means what? Always surrender to Krishna. So just like, suppose you have invited a very big person, big personality to your house. He has come as your guest. Come as a guest. And normally he won't come because he is a great personality. But he is a great personality at the same time. We have gone up to him and requested him, you please come to our house. We want to make prasadam for you and honor you somehow, if you would, and request him in a polite way or in a humble way if you have invited somebody. And imagine that he has accepted that. Say a big sannyasi or a big personality like that. Not talking about big businessmen or rich people, that anybody will come. If he is business, like he will come. But here we are talking about someone who is in a spiritually elevated state. You have gone and invited him, and you have told him that you want to offer prasadam to him and serve him for some time. So that person, if he has, suppose he has accepted your invitation and he is coming to your house, but but normally he won't come. But we have invited him, saying to him that with respect you have invited him to come, and you have to, when he comes, you are saying to him, I don't have such a large capacity to make you offer everything. My facilities are very limited, but whatever I have got, based on that, I would like to offer you the best thing. So, so, and he comes, and suppose he haven't got anything to offer much, and you say to him, at least accept some glass of water. And if you get a, if you give an invitation like that, say some halpa, not a king or anybody, that he will, if you offer this, what will he say? What will he say to you? He says to you, I'll come on a particular day to your house, provided he is accepted your invitation, and he is coming to your house out of his grace, isn't it? He doesn't have to come to you. He is coming to you because you have gone and invited him in a very humble way and requested for his, he wanted to worship him and he wanted to make you pay your respects to him. So he is, out of his kindness, he has accepted your invitation and he is coming to your house. He is no need for him to come, but he is coming because of his kindness, isn't it? So similarly, due to Krishna's kindness, and just like this person, suppose he is a great personality and he has accepted your invitation, and he says to you, out of his grace, out of his mercy, he is saying to you, I will come to your house on a particular day, at a particular time, at a particular time. And when he is coming, you have arranged everything at home according to your capacity to make an arati, plate for doing arati to him. Suppose he is a sannyasi or a highly spiritually developed personality, in that case. And you brought all the worshipable objects, worshipping objects like dhupam, deepam, gandham, and incense, and water, and chamara, everything. And you have arranged nice flowers, fruits, everything to welcome him. So you have invited him and received him properly. And then you are thinking where to ask him, where to sit. Where to ask him to sit. So he doesn't have modern facilities at home. He's simple, living, simple person he is. He doesn't have very expensive sofa sets or anything like that. All he has got is some mats at home. So he says to him that he offers this mat to him, and he says to that person, this is my capacity. I can only offer you these things. And we are not in a position that we can't look after him like the way when he is living in his opulent place. If it's a king, how he lives in the palace, you can't provide that palatial comforts in your house. And you can't offer a seat like the way he sits in the palace. But because he is a king, he has come to your house, you have to still offer what we have got and tell him that I'm offering this to you because you are the king and this is what are my greatest facility, what I have got at home. And he will be pleased with that because he offered him the best what you have got. And he will say, that is sufficient, I don't mind, that's acceptable, he said. So here, what do you find? You find that respect in the mind, in the person's, in the devotee's mind, bhakti, they are more important than what you are offering to him. He is still accepting that. He is accepting that, why? Because of your humility and because of your respect for him and because of your bhakti in your heart. That's what has captured him, is it not? Not the opulence what you have shown to him. What you have shown to him. So if these three things, respect for the guest, or respect for the guest, bhakti for the guest, and shraddha in everything what you do for the guest, If these three things are there, it will please him, that person, even if the opulence is not there. If the respect is there, if the Shraddha is there, and if the bhakti is there, that person will be pleased. So similarly, Krishna also is like that. That if these three things are not there, then even if how opulent your worship is, Krishna won't accept that. Krishna won't accept that. But if these three things are there, and whatever worship you are doing to Krishna, if these three things are there, Krishna will accept that. Krishna will accept that. This is the rule. Therefore, bhakti is the main tool. Bhakti is the main tool. That is the most important thing from that verse. And in the same thing, when the people who belong to the first three varna, Brahmana, Kshatriya and Shudra, when they engage in deity worship, the speciality with that, that's what is the next verse. Yatha sanigamenoktam dijatvam prapya purusha yatha yajedamam bhaktya shraddhaya tannibhodame yatha sanigamenoktam dijatvam prapya purusha yatha yajedamam bhaktya shraddhaya tannibhodame. Trivarnigam means Brahmana, Kshatriya and Vaishya. All three of them, according to their Shastra Vidhi, according to the Shastram, if the Upanayanam ceremony was performed for them, after that, with bhakti and shraddha, how they should worship me, listen that from me. Krishna says this to Uddhava. All the three, Brahmana, Kshatriya and Vaishya, after they have studied Shastram and Upanayana Vidhi, Upanayana Samskaram that has happened to them, and how they should worship me with bhakti and shraddha, or how bhakti and shraddha should be present in their worship, listen to me, that Krishna is saying here through the how they should worship me, listen to that from me, Krishna is saying here. So here in one's own sampradaya or practice, that sampradaya acharanam. Sampradaya means in every sampradaya, the deity worship process is spoken in a different way. So, if you are following that, then you will become progressed in the spiritual life. If not, you will become a dvija. Brahmanyatva means, becoming a brahmana means, that everybody has got the permission to wear the Yajna Sutram. Yajna Sutram means that thread, sacred thread. But particularly all of them, Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya and Shudra, all of them are allowed to wear that, particularly in certain special occasions. They are all allowed to wear. And Dijatva means that becoming a Brahmana by wearing this Sutram. Wearing the Sutram. And suppose you have approached as a child a spiritual master and learned from him this process of worship, and similarly from the spiritual master you heard the Moola Mantram of the particular deity and Dhyana Mantram. There is Moola Mantram and Dhyana Mantram. Dhyana Mantram for meditation, Moola Mantram is only for the sake of becoming aware of the features of the deity, Krishna's presence inside. And if these things are there, he is supposed to chant that Moola Mantram for a very long period of time, and what is known as Siddhi, Japa Siddhi, has to happen to him. That means after chanting that holy name or the Moola Mantram for a long period of time, he becomes perfect in that. Perfection happens to him. He gets all the support what is needed from that mantram alone for his worship. This is called Dijatvam. Therefore, it can be done by anybody. Women can do that. And according to their place where they are living and the tradition what they have followed, and you have to come through that process. That's all you can say about that. So, once you have become a Brahmana, and the Guru, what he has given you the mantram, the Brahmana has to perform what is known as Purascharanam. Purascharanam means that you chant how many letters are there in that mantram, chant that lakh, 100,000 times, depending on how many letters are there. For example, Om Namo Narayanaya, there are, this is called Ashtachari. Ashtachari means there are 8 letters in there. Hare Krishna Mahamantra is called Shodashachari, 16 syllables in there, Shodashachari. So similarly, there is different mantras, Ashtachari, Shodashachari, and so on. And these mantras which were given to us was given with the intention that it will help you for your deity worship in the process. Plus also it is indication that you have to chant that mantra. If it is Om Namo Narayanaya, you have to chant that mantra 800,000 times. 8 lakhs. 800,000 times you have to chant. Achara Laksham it is called. The guru or spiritual master will tell him before you start the deity worship. Before you start the deity worship, chant that Om Namo Narayanaya 800,000 times. Only after that he is allowed to come to the deity worship. You don't start the deity worship straight away. Oh, I got a thread now, I'll start the deity worship. No. First of all, purify yourself. And the purificatory process is by chanting this Mula Mantra. By chanting the Mula Mantra. Some places, it will be Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So the Acharya who is teaching him the worship, for example, small children, 5 years, 6 years, when they are admitted to this institution where they teach deity worship, there are institutions who teach the boys, young boys, small boys, 5 years, 6 years old, they pick them up at the early stage itself and start training them in the deity worship. So initially, first thing given is, this Mula Mantram is given to the child and told him to start chanting that. Acharya decides how many times you should chant, 800,000 times or 100,000 times, whatever it is. So he says to them, Akshara Laksham, they'll say, how many letters are there? He'll tell them that many number of lakhs. So 16 letters means 100,000 times, 1.6 million or sometimes you have to chant the Hare Krishna Mantra. So at least that must be chanted. But normally, if you chant Akshara Laksham, Siddhi will come from that, if it is chanted properly. Akshara Laksham, if you chant any mantra, there will be the Siddhi, perfection will come from that. This is the normal rule followed by the, in the schools, where they teach the Tandriya Vidyavidam, they call it, where they teach the Tandriya Vidhi. Vaidya Vidhi and Tandriya Vidhi is both taught there. And there are experienced personalities who have done deity worship for a very long period of time. They are the people who teach there about this deity worship in those places. So, Archayam standile agnau agnauva surye vapsukhadi dvije dravyena bhakti yuktor chel suguryam maam amayaya. Archayam standile agnauva surye vapsukhadi dvije dravyena bhakti yuktor chel suguryam maam amayaya. Krishna is saying here, you can worship me in all these places. Archayam, in the deity form, on the floor, in the fire, in the sun, in the water, in your own heart, in a brahmana, anywhere you like, you can worship. But, and you worship me with flowers in all these places. But what is the most important thing? Swagurum maam amayaya amayaya. That means there should be no crookedness in your dealings. You should be very, very honest about everything in your life. In everything, your dealings, in your vyavaharam also, you have to be very honest. Therefore, generally what is done is, in big temples, if a pujari, nowadays things have changed. Traditionally, those families who had done this, they won't engage in vyavaharam. They won't get involved in vyavaharam because vyavaharam means maya. And maya means cheating, lying, lies, and all kinds of dealings will come from that. One side that's going on, other side deity worship is going on. How will it work? It cannot work, is it? Suppose I am doing a lot of shoddy dealings. And my mind is always in a crooked way going. If I sit in front of the deity, what will I be thinking about? My vasana will go in that direction, isn't it? So I'll be doing everything with my hand, whatever, in a mechanical way. But bhavam is not there. Why? Because there is no purity inside. There is no purity inside. Therefore, the right thing is in this situation is that when you know you can't do it in the proper way, give that responsibility to those who have the capacity to do it and support them from whatever way you can. That's the best thing to do. Because if you start doing everything on your own, you can't do it. You just don't have that purity inside. But many, many temples where you will see sometimes young boys when they do the deity worship, how pure they are. Because they have, at a very early age, they have been taken to these schools where deity worship is given, taught. They were never exposed to the Vyavaharam in this world. And after training for 8 or 10 years, the only it takes in the deity worship schools, they are sent to the temples. So because they were not exposed to the world outside to the extent what others are, there will be a purity in them. Their worship will be honest and sincerity will be there. And that is why traditionally they followed that process. But people, because they did not look after the temples, they did not support their deity worship, because of that what happened? This system has broken down. But still, people are trying to keep that going, because deity worship process requires purity. Without purity, if you do that, it will not bring any results. So that is why Krishna is using that specific word there. You can see there. Amaya. Maya should not be there in your dealings while dealing with the deity. That's the most important principle. So we'll continue this tomorrow and we'll do some kirtan now.